Key of Light by Nora Roberts. For Kathy Honorato, for being my keeper. 'Tis to create, and in creating live a being more intense, that we endow with what form our fancy, gaining as we give the life we image. Byron. Chapter 1. The storm ripped over the mountains, gushing torrents of rain that struck the ground with a sharp ring of metal on stone. Lightning strikes spat down, angry artillery fire that slammed against the cannon roar of thunder. There was a gleeful kind of mien in the air, a sizzle of temper and spite that boiled with power. It suited Mallory Price's mood perfectly. Hadn't she asked herself what else could go wrong? Now, in answer to that weary and completely rhetorical question, nature, in all her maternal wrath, was showing her just how bad things could get. There was an ominous rattling somewhere in the dash of her sweet little Mazda, and she still had 19 payments to go on it. In order to make those payments, she had to keep her job. She hated her job. That wasn't part of the Mallory Price life plan, which she had begun to outline at the age of 8. 20 years later, that outline had become a detailed and organized checklist, complete with headings, subheadings, and cross-references. She revised it meticulously on the first day of each year. She was supposed to love her job. It said so, quite clearly, under the heading of career. She'd worked at the gallery for 7 years, the last 3 of those as manager, which was right on schedule. And she had loved it, being surrounded by art, having an almost free hand in the displaying, the acquiring, the promotion, and the setup for showings and events. The fact was, she'd begun to think of the gallery as hers, and knew full well that the rest of the staff, the clients, the artists, and craftsmen, felt very much the same. James P. Horace might have owned the smart little gallery, but he never questioned Mallory's decisions, and on his increasingly rare visits, he complimented her always on the acquisitions, the ambiance, the sales. It had been perfect, which was exactly what Mallory intended her life to be. After all, if it wasn't perfect, what was the point? Everything had changed when James forsook 53 years of comfortable bachelorhood and acquired himself a young, sexy wife. A wife, Mallory thought with her blue steel eyes narrowing in resentment, who decided to make the gallery her personal pet. It didn't matter that the new Mrs. Horace knew next to nothing about art, about business, about public relations, or about managing employees. James doted on his Pamela, and Mallory's dream job had become a daily nightmare. But she'd been dealing with it, Mallory thought as she scowled through her dark-drenched windshield. She had determined her strategy. She would simply wait Pamela out. She would remain calm and self-possessed until this nasty little bump was passed and the road smoothed out again. Now that excellent strategy was out the window. She'd lost her temper when Pamela countermanded her orders on a display of art glass and turned the perfectly and beautifully organized gallery upside down with clutter and ugly fabrics. There were some things she could tolerate, Mallory told herself, but being slapped in the face with hideous taste in her own space wasn't one of them. Then again, blowing up at the owner's wife was not the path to job security, particularly when the words myopic plebeian bimbo were employed. Lightning split the sky over the rise ahead, and Mallory winced as much in memory of her temper as from the flash. A very bad move on her part, which only showed what happened when you gave in to temper and impulse. To top it off, she'd spilled cappuccino on Pamela's Escada suit, but that had been an accident. Almost. However fond James was of her, Mallory knew her livelihood was hanging by a very slim thread, and when the thread broke, she would be sunk. Art galleries weren't a dime a dozen in a pretty, picturesque town like Pleasant Valley. She would either have to find another area of work as a stopgap or relocate. Neither option put a smile on her face. She loved Pleasant Valley, loved being surrounded by the mountains of western Pennsylvania. She loved the small-town feel, the mix of quaint and sophisticated that drew the tourists and the getaway crowds that spilled out of neighboring Pittsburgh for impulsive weekends. Even when she was a child growing up in the suburbs of Pittsburgh, Pleasant Valley was exactly the sort of place she'd imagined living in. She craved the hills, with their shadows and textures, and the tidy streets of a valley town, the simplicity of the pace, the friendliness of neighbors. The decision to someday fold herself into the fabric of Pleasant Valley had been made when she was 14 and spent a long holiday weekend there with her parents. Just as she'd decided, when she wandered through the gallery that long-ago autumn, that she would one day be part of that space. Of course, at the time, she had thought her paintings would hang there. But that was one item on her checklist that she'd been forced to delete rather than tick off when it was accomplished. She would never be an artist, but she had to be, needed to be, involved with and surrounded by art. Still, she didn't want to move back to the city. She wanted to keep her gorgeous, roomy apartment 2 blocks from the gallery, with its views of the Appalachians, its creaky old floors, and its walls that she'd covered with carefully selected artwork. But the hope of that was looking as dim as the stormy sky. So she hadn't been smart with her money, Mallory admitted with a windy sigh. She didn't see the point of letting it lie in some bank when it could be turned into something lovely to look at or to wear. Until it was used, money was just paper. Mallory tended to use a great deal of paper. She was overdrawn at the bank. Again. She'd maxed out her credit cards. Ditto. But, she reminded herself, she had a great wardrobe and the start of a very impressive art collection, which she would have to sell, piece by piece, and most likely at a loss to keep a roof over her head if Pamela brought the axe down. But maybe tonight would buy her some time and goodwill. She hadn't wanted to attend the cocktail reception at Warrior's Peak, a fanciful name for a spooky old place, she thought. Another time she would have been thrilled at the opportunity to see the inside of the great old house so high on the ridge, and to rub elbows with people who might be patrons of the arts. But the invitation had been odd, written in an elegant hand on heavy stone-colored paper with the logo of an ornate gold key in lieu of letterhead. Though it was tucked in her evening bag now, along with her compact, her lipstick, her cell phone, her glasses, a fresh pen, business cards, and $10, Mallory remembered the wording. The pleasure of your company is desired for cocktails and conversation, 8 p.m., September 4th, Warrior's Peak. You are the key. The lock awaits. Now, how weird was that? Mallory asked herself, and gritted her teeth as the car shimmied in a sudden gust of wind. The way her luck was going, it was probably a scam for a pyramid scheme. The house had been empty for years. She knew it had been purchased recently, but the details were sparse. An outfit called Triad, she recalled. She assumed it was some sort of corporation looking to turn the place into a hotel or a mini-resort, which didn't explain why they'd invited the manager of the gallery, but not the owner and his interfering wife. Pamela had been pretty peeved about the slight, so that was something. Still, Mallory would have passed on the evening. She didn't have a date, just another aspect of her life that currently sucked, and driving alone into the mountains to a house straight out of Hollywood horror on the strength of an invitation that made her uneasy wasn't on her list of fun things to do in the middle of the work week. There hadn't even been a number or a contact for an RSVP, and that, she felt, was arrogant and rude. Her intended response of ignoring the invitation would have been equally arrogant and rude, but James had spotted the envelope on her desk. He'd been so excited, so pleased by the idea of her going, had pressed her to relay all the details of the house's interior to him, and he'd reminded her that if she could discreetly drop the name of the gallery into conversation from time to time, it would be good for business. If she could score a few clients, it might offset the Escada mishap and the bimbo comment. Her car chugged up the narrowing road that cut through the dense, dark forest. She'd always thought of those hills and woods as a kind of sleepy hollow effect that ringed her pretty valley. But just now, with the wind and rain and dark, the less serene aspects of that old tale were a little too much in evidence for her peace of mind. If whatever was rattling in her dash was serious, she could end up broken down on the side of the road, huddled in the car, listening to the moans and lashes of the storm, and imagining headless horsemen while she waited for a tow truck she couldn't afford. Obviously, the answer was not to break down. She thought she caught glimpses of lights beaming through the rain and trees, but her windshield wipers were whipping at the highest speed and were still barely able to shove aside the flood of rain. As lightning snapped again, she gripped the wheel tighter. She liked a good Hellcat storm as much as anyone, but she wanted to enjoy this one from someplace inside, any place, while drinking a nice glass of wine. She had to be close. How far could any single road climb before it just had to start falling down the other side of the mountain? She knew Warrior's Peak stood atop the ridge, guarding the valley below, or lording it over the valley, depending on your viewpoint. She hadn't passed another car for miles, which only proved that anyone with half a brain wasn't out driving in this mess, she thought. The road forked, and the bend on the right streamed between enormous stone pillars. Mallory slowed, gawked at the life-size warriors standing on each pillar. Perhaps it was the storm, the night, or her own jittery mood, but they looked more human than stone, with hair flying around their fierce faces, their hands gripping the hilts of their swords. In the shimmer of lightning, she could almost see muscles rippling in their arms over their broad, bare chests. She had to fight the temptation to get out of the car for a closer look, but the chill that tripped down her spine as she turned through the open iron gates had her glancing back up at the warriors with as much wariness as appreciation for the skill of the sculptor. Then she hit the brakes and fishtailed on the crushed stone of the roadbed. Her heart jammed into her throat as she stared at the stunning buck standing arrogantly a foot in front of the bumper and the sprawling, eccentric lines of the house behind him. For a moment, she took the deer for a sculpture as well, though why any sane person would set a sculpture in the center of a driveway was beyond her. Then again, sane didn't seem to be the operative word for anyone who would choose to live in the house on the ridge. But the deer's eyes gleamed, a sharp sapphire blue in the beam of her headlights, and its head with the great crowning rack turned slightly. Regally, Mallory mused, mesmerized. Rain streamed off his coat, and in the next flash of light, that coat seemed as white as the moon. He stared at her, but there was nothing of fear, nothing of surprise in those glinting eyes. There was, if such things were possible, a kind of amused disdain. Then he simply walked away through the curtain of rain, the rivers of fog, and was gone. Wow! She let out a long breath, shivered in the warmth of her car. And one more wow! She murmured as she stared at the house. She'd seen pictures of it, and paintings. She'd seen its silhouette hulking on the ridge above the valley, but it was an entirely different matter to see it up close with a storm raging. Something between a castle, a fortress, and a house of horrors, she decided. Its stone was obsidian black, with juts and towers, peaks and battlements stacked and spread as if some very clever, very wicked child had placed them at his whim. Against that rain-slicked black, long narrow windows, perhaps hundreds of them, all glowed with gilded light. Someone was not worried about his electric bill. Fog drifted around its base like a moat of mist. In the next shock of lightning, she caught a glimpse of a white banner with the gold key madly waving from one of the topmost spires. She inched the car closer. Gargoyles, hunched along the walls, crawled over the eaves. Rainwater spewed out of their grinning mouths, spilled from clawed hands as they grinned down at her. She stopped the car in front of the stone skirt of a wide portico and considered very seriously turning back into the storm and driving away. She called herself a coward, a childish idiot. She asked herself where she'd lost her sense of adventure and fun. The insults worked well enough that she soon was tapping her fingers on the car's door handle. At the quick rap on her window, a scream shot out of her throat. The bony white face surrounded by a black hood that peered in at her turned the scream into a kind of breathless keening. Gargoyles do not come to life, she assured herself, repeating the words over and over in her head as she rolled the window down a cautious half inch. Welcome to Warrior's Peak! His voice boomed over the rain, and his welcoming smile showed a great many teeth. If you'll just leave your keys in the car, miss, I'll see to it for you. Before she could think to slap down the locks, he pulled her door open. He blocked the sweep of wind and rain with his body and the biggest umbrella she'd ever seen. I'll see you safe and dry to the door. What was that accent? English? Irish? Scots? Thank you. She started to climb out, felt herself pinned back. Panic dribbled into embarrassment as she realized she had yet to unhook her seatbelt. Freed, she huddled under the umbrella, struggling to regulate her breathing as he walked her to the double entrance doors. They were wide enough to accommodate a semi and boasted dull silver knockers, big as turkey platters, fashioned into dragons' heads. Some welcome, Mallory thought an instant before one of the doors opened, and light and warmth poured out. The woman had a straight and gorgeous stream of flame-colored hair. It spilled around a pale face of perfect angles and curves. Her green eyes danced as if at some private joke. She was tall and slim, garbed in a long gown of fluid black. A silver amulet holding a fat, clear stone hung between her breasts. Her lips, as red as her hair, curved as she held out a hand sparkling with rings. She looked, Mallory thought, like someone out of a very sexy fairy tale. Miss Price, welcome. Such a thrilling storm, but distressing, I'm sure, to be out in it. Come in. The hand was warm and strong, and stayed clasped over Mallory's as the woman drew her into the entrance hall. The light showered down from a chandelier of crystal so fine that it resembled spun sugar sparkling over the twists and curves of silver. The floor was mosaic, depicting the warriors from the gate and what seemed to be a number of mythological figures. She couldn't kneel down and study it as she might have liked, and was already struggling to hold back an orgasmic moan at the paintings that crowded walls the color of melted butter. I'm so glad you could join us tonight, the woman continued. I'm Rowena. Please, let me take you into the parlor. There's a lovely fire. Early in the year for one, but the storm seemed to call for it. Was the drive difficult? Challenging, Miss Rowena. Just Rowena. Rowena, I wonder if I could take a moment to freshen up before joining the other guests. Of course. Powder room. She gestured to a door tucked under the long sweep of the front stairs. The parlor is the first door on your right. Take your time. Thank you. Mallory slipped inside and immediately decided that powder room was a very poor label for the plush, spacious area. The half-dozen candles on the marble counter streamed out light and scent. Burgundy hand towels edged in ecru lace were arranged beside the generous pool of sink. The faucet gleamed gold in the fanciful shape of a swan. Here, the floor mosaic showed a mermaid sitting on a rock, smiling out at a blue sea as she combed her flame-colored hair. This time, after double-checking to make certain that she'd locked the door, Mallory did kneel down to study the craftsmanship. Gorgeous, she thought, running her fingertips over the tiles. Old, certainly, and brilliantly executed. Was there anything more powerful than the ability to create beauty? She straightened, washed her hands with soap that smelled faintly of rosemary. She took a moment to admire the collection of waterhouse nymphs and sirens framed on the walls before digging out her compact. There was little she could do for her hair. Though she'd drawn it back and anchored it at her nape with a rhinestone clip, the weather had played havoc with the dark blonde curls. It was a look, she thought, as she dusted her nose, sort of arty and carefree. Not elegant like the redhead, but it suited her well enough. She reapplied her lipstick, satisfied that the pale rose had been a good investment. Subtle worked best with her milkmaid coloring. She paid too much for the cocktail suit, of course. But a woman was entitled to a few weaknesses, she reminded herself as she straightened the slim satin lapels. Besides, the slate blue was right for her eyes, and the tailored lines pulled it all together into a style both professional and elegant. She closed her bag, lifted her chin. Okay, Mal, let's go drum up some business. She stepped out, forced herself not to tiptoe back down the hall to drool over the paintings. Her heels clicked briskly on the tile. She always enjoyed the sound of it. Powerful. Female. And when she stepped through the first arch to the right, the thrilled gasp escaped before she could block it. She'd never seen its like in or out of a museum. Antiques so lovingly tended that their surfaces gleamed like mirrors. The rich, deep colors that demonstrated an artist's flair. Rugs, pillows, and draperies that were as much art forms as the paintings and statuary were. On the far wall was a fireplace she could have stood in with her arms stretched out at her sides. Framed in malachite, it held enormous logs that snapped with tongues of red and gold fire. This was the perfect setting for a woman who looked like she stepped out of a fairy tale. She wanted to spend hours there, to wallow in all that marvelous color and light. The uneasy woman who had huddled in her car in the rain was long forgotten. It took 5 minutes for my eyes to stop bugging out of my head after I walked in. Mallory jolted, then turned and stared at the woman who stood framed in the side window. This one was a brunette, with dense brown hair skimming between her jawline and shoulders in a stylish swing. She was perhaps 6 full inches taller than Mallory's compact 5'4", and had the lush curves to match the height. Both were set off with trim black pants and a knee-length jacket worn over a snug white top. She held a champagne flute in one hand and extended the other as she walked across the room. Mallory saw that her eyes were deep, dark brown, and direct. Her nose was narrow and straight, her mouth wide and unpainted. The faintest hint of dimples fluttered in her cheek when she smiled. I'm Dana. Dana Steele. Mallory Price. Nice to meet you. Great jacket. Thanks. I was pretty relieved when I saw you drive up. It's a hell of a place, but I was getting a little spooked rattling around by myself. It's nearly 4:15. She tapped the face of her watch. You'd think some of the other guests would be here by now. Where's the woman who met me at the door? Rowena. Dana pursed her lips as she glanced back toward the archway. She glides in and out, looking gorgeous and mysterious. I'm told our host will be joining us shortly. Who is our host? Your guess is as good as mine. Haven't I seen you? Dana added. In the valley? Possibly. I manage the gallery. For the time being, she thought. That's it. I've come to a couple of showings there, and sometimes I just wander in and look around avariciously. I'm at the library. A reference librarian. They both turned as Rowena walked in, though glided in, Mallory thought, was a better description. I see you've introduced yourselves. Lovely. What can I get you to drink, Miss Price? I'll have what she's having. Perfect. Even as she spoke, a uniformed maid came in bearing 2 flutes on a silver tray. Please, help yourselves to the canapés and make yourselves at home. I hope the weather isn't keeping your other guests away, Dana put in. Rowena merely smiled. I'm sure everyone who's expected will be here shortly. If you'll excuse me just another moment. Okay, this is just weird. Dana picked a canapé at random, discovered it was a lobster puff. Delicious, but weird. Fascinating. Mallory sipped her champagne and trailed her fingers over a bronze sculpture of a reclining fairy. I'm still trying to figure out why I got an invitation. Since they were there, and so was she, Dana sampled another canapé. No one else at the library got one. No one else I know got one, for that matter. I'm starting to wish I'd talked my brother into coming with me after all. He's got a good bullshit barometer. Mallory found herself grinning. You don't sound like any librarian I've ever known. You don't look like one either. I burned all my Laura Ashley 10 years ago. Dana gave a little shrug. Restless, moving toward irritated, she tapped her fingers on the crystal flute. I'm going to give this about 10 more minutes, then I'm booking. If you go, I go. I'd feel better heading back into that storm if I drove to the valley behind someone else. Same goes. Dana frowned toward the window, watched the rain beat on the other side of the glass. Crappy night. And it was an extremely crappy day. Driving all the way here and back in this mess for a couple of glasses of wine and some canapes just about caps it. You too? Mallory wandered toward a wonderful painting of a masked ball. It made her think of Paris, though she'd never been there except in her dreams. I only came tonight in hopes of making some contacts for the gallery. Job insurance, she added, lifting her glass in a mock toast. As my job is currently in a very precarious state. Mine too. Between budget cuts and nepotism, my position was adjusted. My hours trimmed back to 25 a week. How the hell am I supposed to live on that? And my landlord just announced that my rent's going up first of next month. There's a rattle in my car, and I spent my auto maintenance budget on these shoes. Dana looked down, pursed her lips. Terrific shoes. My computer crashed this morning. Enjoying herself, Mallory turned away from the painting and raised a brow at Dana. I called my boss's new wife a bimbo, and then spilled latte on her designer suit. Okay, you win. In the spirit of good fellowship, Dana stepped over and clinked her glass against Mallory's. What do you say we hunt up the Welsh goddess and find out what's going on around here? Is that what the accent is? Welsh? Gorgeous, isn't it? But be that as it may, I think... She trailed off as they heard that distinctive click of high heels on tile. The first thing Mallory noticed was the hair. It was black and short, with thick bangs cut so blunt they might have required a ruler. Beneath them, the tawny eyes were large and long, making her think of Waterhouse again and his fairies. She had a triangular face glowing with what might have been excitement, nerves, or excellent cosmetics. The way her fingers kneaded at her little black bag, Mallory went with the nerves. She wore red, stoplight red, in an abbreviated dress that clung to her curvy body and showed off terrific legs. The heels that had clicked along the tile were a good 4 inches high and sharp as stilettos. Hi. Her voice was breathy, and her gaze was already flicking around the room. She said I should just come right in. Join the party, such as it is. Dana Steele, and my equally baffled companion this evening, Mallory Price.
I'm Zoe McCourt.
She took another cautious step into the room, as if she was waiting for someone to tell her there'd been a mistake and boot her out again.
Holy cow, this place, it's like a movie. It's, beautiful and all, but I keep expecting that scary guy in the smoking jacket to come in.
Vincent Price?
No relation, Mallory said with a grin. I take it you don't know any more about what's going on than we do.
No. I think I got invited by mistake, but... She broke off, ogling a bit when a servant entered with another flute on a tray.
Thanks.
She took the crystal gingerly, then just smiled down at the bubbling wine.
Champagne. It has to be a mistake. But I couldn't pass up the chance to come. Where's everybody else?
Good question. Dana angled her head, charmed and amused as Zoe took a small testing sip of champagne. Are you from the valley?
Yes. Well, for the last couple years.
3 for 3, Mallory murmured.
Do you know anyone else who got an invitation for tonight?
No. In fact, I asked around, which is probably why I got fired today.
Is that food just to take?
You got fired? Mallory exchanged a look with Dana.
3 for 3.
Carly, she owns the salon where I work.
Worked,
Zoe corrected herself, and walked toward a tray of canapes. She heard me talking about it with one of my customers and got bent out of shape.
Boy, these are terrific.
Her voice had lost its breathiness now, and as she appeared to relax, Mallory detected the faintest hint of twang. Anyway, Carly's been gunning for me for months. I guess the invite, seeing as she didn't get one, put her nose out of joint. Next thing I know, she's saying there's 20 missing from the till. I never stole anything in my life. Bitch. She took another, more enthusiastic gulp of champagne. And then bam! I'm out of my ear. It doesn't matter. It's not gonna matter. I'll get another job. I hated working there anyway. God! It mattered, Mallory thought. The sparkle in Zoe's eyes that had as much fear to it as anger said it mattered a great deal. You're a hairdresser. Yeah. Hair and skin consultant, if you want to get snooty. I'm not the type who gets invited to fancy parties at fancy places, so I guess it's a mistake. Considering, Mallory shook her head. I don't think someone like Rowena makes mistakes. Ever. Well, I don't know. I wasn't going to come. Then I thought it would cheer me up. Then my car wouldn't start. Again. I had to borrow the babysitters. You have a baby? Dana asked. He's not a baby anymore. Simon's 9. He's great. I wouldn't worry about the job, but I've got a kid to support. And I didn't steal any goddamn $20, or 20 cents for that matter. I'm not a thief. She caught herself, flushed scarlet. Sorry. I'm sorry. Bubbles loosening my tongue, I guess. Don't worry about it. Dana rubbed a hand up and down Zoe's arm. You want to hear something strange? My job and my paycheck just got cut to the bone. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do, and Mallory thinks she's about to get the axe at her job.
Really?
Zoe looked from one face to the other. That's just weird. And nobody we know is invited here tonight. With a wary glance toward the doorway, Mallory lowered her voice. From the looks of things, we're it. I'm a librarian. You're a hairdresser. She runs an art gallery. What do we have in common? We're all out of work, Mallory frowned. Or the next thing to it. That alone is strange when you consider the Valley's got a population of about 5,000. What are the odds of 3 women hitting a professional wall the same day in the same little town? Next, we're all from the Valley. We're all female, about the same age. 28? 27, Dana said. 26. 27 in December. Zoe shivered. This is just too strange. Her eyes widened as she looked at her half-empty glass, and she set it hastily aside. You don't think there's anything in there that shouldn't be, do you? I don't think we're going to be drugged and sold into white slavery. Dana's tone was dry, but she set her glass down as well. People know we're here, right? My brother knows where I am. And people at work. My boss, his wife, your ex-boss, Mallory said to Zoe, your babysitter. Anyway, this is Pennsylvania, for God's sake, not, I don't know, Zimbabwe. I say we go find the mysterious Rowena and get some answers. We stick together, right? Dana nodded at Mallory, then Zoe. Zoe swallowed. Honey, I'm your new best friend. To seal it, she took Dana's hand, then Mallory's. How lovely to see you. Their hands were still joined as they turned and looked at the man who stood in the archway. He smiled, stepped inside the room. Welcome to Warrior's Peak. Chapter 2. For a moment, Mallory thought one of the warriors from the gate had come to life. He had the same fierce male beauty in his face, the same powerful build. His hair, black as the storm, waved back in wings from that strong, sculpted face. His eyes were midnight blue. She felt the power of them, a flash of heat along her skin, when they met hers. She wasn't a fanciful woman, anything but, she told herself. But the storm, the house, the sheer ferocity of that gaze made her feel as though he could see everything in her mind, everything that had ever been in her mind. Then his gaze left hers, and the moment passed. I am Pitt. Thank you for gracing what is, for now, our home. He took Mallory's free hand, lifted it to his lips. His touch was cool, the gesture both courtly and dignified.
Miss Price?
She felt Zoe's fingers go lax on hers. Then Pip was moving to her, lifting her fingers in turn.
Miss McCourt.
And Dana's.
Miss Steele.
A boom of thunder had Mallory jolting, and her hand groped for Zoe's again. He was just a man, she assured herself. It was just a house, and someone had to get everything back on an even keel.
You have an interesting home, Mr. Pitt, she managed.
Yes. Won't you sit? Ah, Rowena. You've met my companion. He took Rowena's arm when she came to his side. They fit, Mallory decided, like two halves of a coin.
By the fire, I think, Rowena said,
gesturing toward the fireplace.
Such a fierce night. Let's be comfortable.
I think we'd be more comfortable if we understood what's going on. Dana planted her high-heeled boots and stood her ground. Why we were asked here?
Certainly, but the fire's so lovely. There's nothing quite like good champagne, good fellowship, and a nice fire on a stormy night. Tell me, Miss Price, what do you think of what you've seen of our art collection?
Impressive. Eclectic. With a glance back at Dana, Mallory let Rowena lead her toward a chair near the fire. You must have spent considerable time on it. Rowena's laugh rippled like fog over water.
Oh, considerable. Pitt and I appreciate beauty in all its forms. In fact, you could say we revere it, as you must, given your choice of profession.
Art is its own reason.
Yes. It's the light in every shadow. And, Pitt, we must make certain Miss Steele sees the library before the evening's over. I hope you'll approve.
She gestured absently at the servant who entered with a crystal champagne bucket.
What would the world be without books?
Books are the world. Curious, cautious, Dana sat.
I think there's been a mistake.
Zoe hung back, looking from face to face.
I don't know anything about art, not real art, and books. I mean, I read, but...
Please, sit. Pitt nudged her gently into a chair. Be at home. I trust your son is well. She stiffened, and those tawny eyes went tiger bright.
Simon's fine.
Motherhood's a kind of art, don't you think, Miss McCourt? A work in progress of the most essential, most vital kind. One that requires valor and heart.
Do you have children?
No, I haven't been given that gift. His hand brushed Rowena's as he spoke, then he lifted his glass. To life and all its mysteries. His eyes gleamed over the rim of the glass. There's no need to fear. No one here wishes you anything but health, happiness, and success.
Why?
Dana demanded. You don't know us. Though you seem to know a great deal more about us than we do about you.
You're a seeker, Miss Steele.
An intelligent, straightforward woman who looks for answers.
I'm not getting any.
He smiled. It's my fondest hope that you'll find all the answers.
To begin, I'd like to tell you a story.
It seems a night for stories.
He settled back.
Like Rowena's, his voice was musical and strong, faintly exotic. The sort, Mallory thought, designed for telling tales on stormy nights. Because of it, she relaxed a little. What else did she have to do, after all, besides sit in a fantastic house by a roaring fire and listen to a strange, handsome man weave a tale while she sipped champagne? It beat eating takeout while reconciling her checkbook, hands down. And if she could wheedle a tour of the place and nudge Pitt toward the gallery as a vehicle to expand his art collection... She might just save her job. So she settled back as well and prepared to enjoy herself. Long ago, in a land of great mountains and rich forests, lived a young god. He was his parents' only child and well beloved. He was gifted with a handsome face and strength of heart and muscle. He was destined to rule one day as his father before him, and so he was reared to be the god king. Cool in judgment, swift in action. There was peace in this world, since gods had walked there. Beauty, music, and art, stories and dance were everywhere. For as long as memory, and a god's memory is infinite, there had been harmony and balance in this place. He paused to sip his wine, his gaze tracking slowly from face to face. From behind the curtain of power, through the veil of the curtain of dreams, they would look on the world of mortals. Lesser gods were permitted to mix and mate with those of the mortal realm at their whim, and so became the fairies and sprites, the sylphs and other creatures of magic. Some found the mortal world more to their tastes and peopled it. Some, of course, were corrupted by the powers, by the world of mortals, and turned to darker ways. Such is the way of nature, even of gods. Pitt eased forward to top a thin cracker with caviar. You've heard stories of magic and sorcery, the fairy tales and fantasies. As one of the guardians of stories and books, Miss Steele, do you consider how such tales become part of the culture, what root of truth they spring from? To give someone or something a power greater than our own. To feed our need for heroes and villains and romance. Dana shrugged, though she was already fascinated. If, for instance, Arthur of the Celts existed as a warrior king, as many scholars and scientists believe, how much more enthralling, more potent is his image if we see him in Camelot with Merlin? If he was conceived with the aid of sorcery and crowned high king as a young boy who pulled a magic sword out of a stone. I love that story, Zoe put in. Well, except for the end. It seems so unfair, but I think... Please, Pitt said. Go on. Well, I sort of think that maybe magic did exist once, before we educated ourselves out of it. I don't mean... Education's bad, she said quickly, squirming as everyone's attention focused on her. I just mean maybe we, locked it away because we started needing logical and scientific answers for everything. Well said, Rowena nodded. A child often tucks his toys in the back of the closet, forgetting the wonder of them as he grows to manhood. Do you believe in wonder, Miss McCourt? I have a 9-year-old son, Zoe replied. All I have to do is look at him to believe in wonder. I wish you'd call me Zoe. Rowena's face lit with warmth. Thank you. Pitt. Ah, yes, to continue the tale. As was the tradition, upon reaching his majority, the young god was sent beyond the curtain for 1 week to walk among the mortals, to learn their ways, to study their weaknesses and strengths, their virtues and flaws. It happened that he saw a young woman, a maid of great beauty and virtue, and seeing, loved, and loving, wanted. And though she was denied to him by the rules of his world, he pined for her. He grew listless, restless, unhappy. He would not eat or drink, nor did he find any appeal in all the young goddesses offered to him. His parents, disturbed at seeing their son so distressed, weakened. They would not give their son to the mortal world, but they brought the maid to theirs. They kidnapped her? Mallory interrupted. They could have done. Rowena filled the flutes again. But love cannot be stolen. It's a choice, and the young god wished for love. Did he get it? Zoe wondered. The mortal maid chose and loved, and gave up her world for his. Pitt rested his hands on his knees. There was anger in the worlds of gods, of mortals, and in that mystical half-world of the fairies. No mortal was to pass through the curtain, yet that most essential rule was now broken. A mortal woman had been taken from her world and into theirs, married to and bedded by their future king for no reason more important than love. What's more important than love? Mallory asked, and earned a slow, quiet look from Pitt. Some would say, nothing. Others would say, honor, truth, loyalty. Others did. And for the first time in the memory of the gods, there was dissension, rebellion. The balance was shaken. The young god king, crowned now, was strong and withstood this, and the mortal maid was beautiful and true. Some were swayed to accept her, and others plotted in secret. There was a whip of outrage in his voice, and a sudden cold fierceness that made Mallory think of the stone warriors again. Battles fought in the open could be quelled, but others were devised in secret chambers, and these ate at the foundation of the world. It came to pass that the god king's wife bore three children, three daughters, demigoddesses with mortal souls. On their birth, their father gifted each with a jeweled amulet for protection. They learned the ways of their father's world and of their mother's. Their beauty, their innocence softened many hearts, turned many minds. For some years there was peace again, and the daughters grew to young women, devoted to each other, each with a talent that enhanced and completed those of her sisters. He paused again, as if gathering himself. They harmed no one, brought only light and beauty to both sides of the curtain. But there remained shadows. One coveted what they had that no god could claim. Through sorcery, through envy, despite all precautions, they were taken into the half-world. The spell cast plunged them into eternal sleep, a living death. And sleeping, they were sent back through the curtain, their mortal souls locked in a box that has three keys. Not even their father's power can break the locks. Until the keys turn, one by two by three, the daughters are trapped in an enchanted sleep, and their souls weep in a prison of glass. "Where are the keys?" Mallory asked. "And why can't the box be opened by enchantment, since it was locked by it?" "Where they are is a puzzle. Many magics and spells have been cast to unlock the box. All have failed. But there are clues. The souls are mortal, and only mortal hands can turn the keys." "My invitation said I was the key." Mallory glanced at Dana and Zoe, got nods of confirmation. "What do we have to do with some mythological legend?" "I have something to show you." Pitt rose, gestured toward the archway. "I hope it interests you." "The storm's getting worse." Zoe sent a wary look toward the windows. "I need to start home. Please, indulge me." "We'll all leave together." Mallory gave Zoe's arm a reassuring squeeze. "Let's just see what it is he wants to show us first. I hope you'll invite me back at some point," she continued, as she walked to the doorway to join Pitt and Rowena. "I'd very much like to see more of your art collection, and perhaps repay the favor by giving you a private tour of the gallery." "You'll certainly be welcome back." Pitt took her arm lightly and led her down the wide hall. "It would be a pleasure for Rowena and me to discuss our collection with someone who understands and appreciates it." He turned toward another archway. "I hope you'll understand and appreciate this particular piece of it." Over another fireplace that roared with flame was a painting that towered to the ceiling. The colors were so vivid, so rich, the style so bold and strong that Mallory's art lover's heart took one fast leap. The portrait was of three women, young, beautiful, in flowing gowns of sapphire, of ruby, of emerald. The one in blue, with golden curls rioting to her waist, sat on a bench that circled a pool. She held a small gold harp. Seated on the silver tiles at her feet, the girl in red had a scroll and quill in her lap, and her hand on her sister's, for surely they were sisters, knee. Beside them, the girl in green stood, a chubby black puppy in the crook of her arm and a short silver sword at her hip. A heartbreak of flowers spilled around them. There were trees with jeweled fruit dripping from the branches, and in the cerulean sky, both birds and fairies were on the wing. Enthralled, Mallory was halfway across the room for a closer look when her heart gave another, harder knock. The girl in blue had her face. Younger, she thought, as she came to an abrupt halt. Certainly more beautiful. The skin was luminous, the eyes deeper, bluer, the hair more luxurious and romantic, but there was no mistaking the power of the resemblance, nor, she saw, as she steadied herself, the resemblance between the others in the portrait and the other two guests at Warrior's Peak. Magnificent work. A master's work, Mallory said, and was amazed at how calm her voice sounded through the buzzing in her ears.
They look like us.
There was wonder in the words as Zoe moved beside Mallory.
How can they?
Good question. And suspicion in Dana's. How did the three of us come to be used as models for what is, obviously, a portrait of the three sisters in the story you just told us?
It was painted before you were born. Before your parents, your grandparents, and those who sired them were born.
Rowena walked toward the portrait, stood below it with her hands folded at her waist. Its age can be verified through tests. Isn't that so, Mallory?
Yes. Its approximate age can be authenticated, but whatever its age, you haven't answered Zoe's question.
The smile that spread on Rowena's face seemed to hold both approval and amusement.
No, I haven't. What else do you see in the painting?
Mallory reached in her purse, took out a pair of black-framed rectangular glasses. She slipped them on and made a more thorough study.
A key, in the right corner of the sky. It seems to be a bird until you look closely.
A second one there, on the branch of a tree, almost hidden by the leaves and fruit. And the third, just visible under the surface of the pool. There's a shadow there, in the trees, in the form of a man, maybe a woman. Just a hint of something dark watching them. Another shadow just sliding onto the silver tile at the edge. A snake.
Ah, and here, in the far background.
She lost herself in the painting, forgot herself, and stepped up onto the hearth.
There's a couple, a man and a woman, embracing.
The woman is robed richly, with the purple symbolizing a woman of rank, and the man is garbed like a soldier, a warrior. There's a raven in the tree just above them, a symbol of impending doom. Just as the sky here is darker, with storm lights, a threat. The sisters are unaware of the threat. They look forward, grouped together, the crown of their ranks glinting in the sunlight that washes this area of the foreground. There's a sense of companionship and affection between them, and the white dove here on the edge of the pool is their purity. Each wears an amulet, the same shape and size, with the jewel reflecting the color of their gown. They are a unit, yet individuals.
It's magnificent work. I can almost see them breathe.
You have a discerning eye. Pitt touched Rowena's arm as he nodded at Mallory. It's the prize of the collection.
And still, Dana pointed out, you haven't answered the question.
Magic couldn't break the spell that locked the souls of the king's daughters into a box of glass. Sorcerers were called, and wizards and witches from all the worlds. But no magics could unbind the curse. So another was cast. In this world, in every generation, three women are born who will come together in one place at one time. They are not sisters, they are not gods, but mortal women. And they are the only ones who can release the innocents.
And you want us to believe that we're those women?
Dana's brows arched. There was a tickle in her throat, but it didn't feel like laughter.
That we just happen to look like the women in this painting?
Nothing just happens. And whether you believe or not changes little. Pitt held out his hands toward them. You are the chosen, and I am charged to tell you.
Well, you've told us, so now I'm to make you this offer, he continued before Dana could finish.
You will each have, in turn, one phase of the moon to find one of the three keys. If within the 28 days the first fails, the matter is done. If the first succeeds, the second's time begins. But if the second fails within her time, the matter is done. If all three keys are brought to this place before the end of the third moon, you will be given a boon.
What sort of boon? Zoe asked.
$1 million. Each.
Get out of town, Dana snorted, then stared at her two companions.
Oh, come on, ladies, this is just screwy. Easy for him to toss money around like confetti when we'd be off on some wild goose chase for a trio of keys that don't exist in the first place.
And if they did?
her eyes brilliant. Zoe turned toward Dana. If they did, wouldn't you want a chance to find them? The chance for that kind of money? What chance? It's a great big world out there. How do you expect to find a little gold key? You will be given, each in turn, a guide. Rowena gestured to a small chest. This we can do, if all agree. You may work together. In fact, we hope that you will. You must all agree. If one refuses the challenge, it's done. If all accept the challenge on the terms, you'll each be given $25,000. It remains yours whether you fail or succeed.
Wait a minute, wait a minute!
Mallory held up a hand, then pulled off her glasses.
Wait a minute, she repeated.
You're saying if we agree to look for these keys, just to look for them, we get $25,000 free and clear?
The amount will be deposited in an account of your choosing immediately, Pitt stated.
Oh, my God!
Zoe clasped her hands.
Oh, my God, she repeated and sat down heavily. This has got to be a dream.
A scam, you mean. What's the catch? Dana questioned. What's the fine print? If you fail, any one of you, the penalty for all will be a year of your lives.
What? Like in jail? Mallory demanded.
No. Rowena motioned to a servant to enter with a coffee cart. A year of your life will not exist.
Poof! Dana snapped her fingers. Like magic.
The keys exist. Not in this house, Rowena murmured, but in this world, this place. This we are able to do. More we are not allowed to say, although we may offer a little guidance. The quest isn't simple, so you will be rewarded for the attempt. Should you succeed, the reward is greater. Should you fail, there is a penalty. Please, take this time to discuss it. Pitt and I will give you some privacy. They walked out of the room, and Rowena turned back to slide the wide pocket doors shut.
This, Dana said as she plucked a tiny cream puff from the dessert tray, is a nut house. And if either of you is actually considering playing along with these fruitcakes, you belong in this nut house.
Let me just say one thing.
Mallory poured a cup of coffee, stirred in two lumps of sugar. $25,000. Each.
You don't really believe they're going to plunk down 75 large because we say, oh, sure, we'll look for the keys. The ones that unlock the box holding the souls of a trio of demigoddesses?
Mallory debated over a mini eclair. Only one way to find out.
They look like us.
Ignoring the coffee and pastries, Zoe stood beneath the painting, staring up.
So much like us.
Yes, they do. And that's just creepy.
Dana nodded when Mallory held up the coffee pot.
Why paint the three of us together that way? We've never met before tonight. And the idea of somebody watching us, taking pictures or sketches or whatever so they could put this portrait together spooks me.
It wasn't something painted on a whim, or quickly. Mallory handed Dana the coffee cup. It's a masterpiece. The skill, the scope, the detail. Someone poured himself or herself into that piece. Someone with incredible talent. And it took an incredible amount of work. If this is a scam, it's an elaborate one. Plus, what's the point?
I'm broke.
You? Dana puffed out her cheeks. Close enough.
I've got some savings, Zoe put in, but I'm going to go through them pretty quick if I don't get another job, and fast. I don't know a lot about it, but it doesn't look like these people would be after the little bit of money we've got.
Agreed. You want some coffee?
Thanks.
She turned back to them and spread her hands.
Look, you all don't know me, and you've got no reason to care, but I could really use this money.
Zoe came forward.
$25,000 would be like a miracle. Security for my son, a chance maybe to do what I've always wanted, have my own little salon. All we have to do is say yes. So we look for some keys. It's not illegal.
There are no keys, Dana insisted.
What if there are?
Zoe put her cup down without drinking.
I have to say, the idea of $25,000 really helps open my mind to possibilities.
And a million?
She gave a quick, baffled laugh.
I can't even think about it. It makes my stomach hurt.
It'd be like a treasure hunt, Mallory murmured. It could be fun. God knows it could be profitable. $25,000 would really close the gap for me, and that's a very practical priority just now. I might be able to have my own place, too. Not like the gallery, but just a little place that spotlights artists and craftspeople. It was a full 10 years before that was due in the order of her life plan, but she could be flexible. Nothing's that simple. Nobody hands you money because you say you'll do something. Dana shook her head. There's got to be more under all this.
Maybe they believe it. The story, Mallory added. If you believed it, $25,000 would be chump change. We're talking souls here.
Unable to help herself, she looked back at the portrait. A soul's worth more than $25,000. Excitement bounced inside her like a bright red ball. She'd never had an adventure, certainly not a paying adventure.
They've got money, they're eccentric, and they believe it. The fact is, going along with it sort of feels like we're the ones pulling the scam.
But I'm going to get over that.
You'll do it?
Zoe grabbed her arm. You're going to do it?
It's not every day you get paid to work for the gods.
Come on, Dana, loosen up. Dana's brows drew together, her forehead forming a stubborn vertical line between them. It's asking for trouble.
I don't know where or how, but it just feels like trouble.
What would you do with $25,000? Mallory purred it, then offered another cream puff.
Invest what I could so I could have my own little bookstore.
Her sigh was wistful, and a sign that she was weakening. I'd serve tea in the afternoons, wine in the evenings, have readings.
Oh, boy.
It's strange how we're all having a job crisis, and that the thing we all want is to have our own place. Zoe sent a wary look at the portrait again.
Don't you think it's strange?
No more strange than being here in this fortress and talking about going on a treasure hunt.
Well, I'm in a fix, Dana murmured.
I say no, it kills it for both of you.
Saying yes makes me feel like an idiot.
I guess I'm an idiot.
Yes?
With a hoot of laughter, Zoe threw her arms around Dana.
This is great. This is amazing.
Take it easy. Chuckling, Dana patted Zoe on the back.
I guess this is the time to pull out the right quote.
One for all, and all for one.
I got a better one.
Mallory picked up her cup again, lifted it in a toast.
Show me the money.
As if on cue, the doors opened. Rowena entered first.
Shall we sit?
We've decided to accept the... Zoe trailed off, looked at Dana.
The challenge.
Yes.
Rowena crossed her legs.
You'll want to look over the contracts.
Contracts? Mallory echoed.
Naturally. A name has power. The writing of one's name, the promise of it, is necessary for all. Once you're satisfied, we'll select for the first key.
Pitt took papers out of the desk, handed one set to each woman. They're simple, I believe, and cover the terms already discussed. If you'll write in where you wish the money to be sent, it will be done.
Doesn't it matter to you that we don't believe in them?
Mallory lifted a hand toward the portrait.
You'll give your word that you'll accept the terms. That's enough for now, Rowena told her.
Pretty straightforward for such an odd business, Dana commented, and promised herself she would take the contract to a lawyer the next day to see if it was binding.
Pitt handed her a pen. As you are straightforward. If and when your turn comes, I know you'll do all you can.
Lightning sizzled along the window glass as the contracts were signed, then countersigned.
You are the chosen, Rowena said as she rose again. Now it's in your hands.
Pitt?
He walked back to the desk, picked up a carved box.
Inside are three discs. One has a figure of a key. The one who chooses that disc begins the quest.
I hope it's not me. With a shaky laugh, Zoe wiped her damp palms on her skirt.
I'm sorry, I'm just really nervous.
She closed her eyes,
reached into the box. Keeping the disc clutched in her fist, she looked at Mallory and Dana. Let's all look at the same time, okay?
Fine. Here goes.
Dana reached in, kept the disc palmed against her side as Mallory reached for the final one.
Okay.
They stood in a circle, facing each other, then held out the discs.
Wow.
Mallory cleared her throat.
Lucky me,
she whispered as she saw the gold key etched into the white disc she had selected.
You are the first, Rowena said, walking to her. Your time starts at sunrise tomorrow and ends at midnight on the 28th day thereafter.
But I get a guide, right? A map or something?
Rowena opened the small chest and withdrew a paper, which she offered to Mallory. Then she spoke the words written on it.
You must seek beauty and truth and courage. One alone will never stand. Two without the third is incomplete. Search within and know what you have yet to know. Find what the dark covets most. Search without, where the light conquers shadows as love conquers sorrow. Silver tears fall for the song she makes there, for it springs from souls. Look beyond and between, see where beauty blooms and the goddess sings. There may be fear, there may be grief, but the true heart vanquishes both. When you find what you seek, love will break the spell, and the heart will forge the key and bring it to light.
Mallory waited a beat. That's it? That's supposed to be a clue?
I'm so glad I didn't have to go first, Zoe said.
Wait, can't you tell me anything else? You and Pitt already know where the keys are, right?
This is all we are allowed to give you, but you have all you need to have.
Rowena laid her hands on Mallory's shoulders, then kissed her cheeks.
Blessings on you.
Later, Rowena stood, letting the fire warm her hands as she stared up at the painting. She felt Pitt come in to stand behind her, turned her face into his hand when he touched her cheek.
I had higher hopes before they came, he told her.
They're bright, resourceful. None are chosen who aren't capable.
Yet we remain in this place, year by century, by millennium.
Don't.
She turned, slid her arms around his waist, pressed herself to him.
Don't despair, my dearest love, before it really begins.
So many beginnings, but never an end.
He bent his head, touched his lips to her brow.
How this place crowds me.
We've done all that can be done.
She laid her cheek on his chest, comforted by the steady sound of his heartbeat.
Have a little faith.
I liked them, she added, and took his hand as they started toward the doors.
They're interesting enough, for mortals, he replied.
As they passed through the archway, the roaring fire vanished, and the lights snapped off, leaving behind a trail of gold in the dark. Chapter 3 She couldn't say she hadn't seen it coming, and James was certainly gentle, even paternal. But the boot was the boot, however it was administered. Being prepared, even having the miraculous cushion of the $25,000 now tucked away in her account, a fact that she had confirmed that morning, didn't make being fired any less horrible and humiliating. Things change. James P. Horace, natty as always in his bow tie and rimless glasses, spoke in modulated tones. In all the years Mallory had known him, she'd never heard him raise his voice. He could be absent-minded, occasionally negligent about practicalities when it came to business, but he was unfailingly kind. Even now his face held a patient and serene expression, a little like an aged cherub, Mallory thought. Though the office door was closed, the rest of the gallery staff would know very shortly the outcome of the meeting.
I like to think of myself as a kind of surrogate father, and as such, I want only the best for you.
Yes, James, but if we don't move in some direction, we stand still. I feel that though this may be difficult for you initially, Mallory,
You'll soon see it's the best thing that could happen. How many clichés, Mallory wondered, could one man use when lowering the boom?
James, I know Pamela and I haven't seen eye to eye, she said, thinking, I'll see your cliché and raise you. As the new kid on the block, she's bound to be a bit defensive, while I tend to be territorial. I'm so terribly sorry I lost my temper. Spilling the coffee was an accident. You know I'd never...
Now, now. He waved his hands in the air. I'm sure it was. I don't want you to give that another thought. Water under the bridge. But the point is, Mallory, Pamela wants to take a more active role in the business, to shake things up a bit.
Desperation slithered into her belly. James, she moved everything in the main room, jumbled pieces in from the salon. She brought fabric in, gold lamé, James, and draped it over the gecko nude like a sarong. Not only was the flow interrupted by the placements, but the result was, well, just tacky. She doesn't understand art and space. She...
Yes, yes. His voice never changed pitch. His face never altered its placid expression. But she'll learn, and I believe that teaching her will be enjoyable. I appreciate her interest in my business and her enthusiasm, just as I've always appreciated yours, Mallory. But the fact is, I really think you've outgrown us here. It's time for you to stretch yourself, broaden your horizons, take some risks.
Her throat closed. Her voice sounded thick when she managed to speak.
I love the gallery, James. I know you do, and you're always welcome here. I feel it's time for me to give you a nudge out of the nest. Naturally, I want you to be comfortable while you're deciding what you'd like to do next.
He took a check out of his breast pocket. A month's severance should help keep the wolf from the door.
What will I do? Where will I go? Frantic questions flew around her brain like terrified birds. This is the only place I've ever worked.
Which makes my point.
He set the check on the desk. I hope you know how fond I am of you, and that you can come to me anytime at all for advice. Though it would probably be best if we kept that between ourselves. Pamela is a little annoyed with you just now.
He gave her an avuncular peck on the cheek, a pat on the head, then strolled out. Patient and placid he might be, but he was also weak. Weak, and though she hated to admit it, hated to realize it after all these years, selfish. It took a selfish weakness to fire an efficient, creative, loyal employee on the whim of his wife. She knew it was useless to cry, but she cried a little anyway as she stood in the small office that she decorated herself and boxed up her personal things. Her lifetime, career-wise, fit into a single storage box. That was efficient again, practical, and, Mallory decided, pathetic. Everything was going to be different now, and she wasn't ready. She had no plan, no outline, no list for what came next. She wouldn't be getting up tomorrow, eating a light, sensible breakfast, dressing for work in the outfit carefully selected tonight. Day after day without purpose, without plan, stretched out in front of her like some bottomless canyon. And the precious order of her life was strewn somewhere down there in the void. It terrified her. But marching along with the fear was pride. So she repaired her makeup and kept her chin up, her shoulders back, as she carried the box out of the office and down the stairs. She did her best to muster up a smile when Todd Grist rushed to the base of the stairs. He was short and trim, clad in his signature black shirt and pants. Two tiny gold hoops glinted in his left earlobe. His hair was a shoulder-length streaky blonde, which Mallory had always envied. The angelic face that it framed drew middle-aged and elderly ladies like the siren song drew sailors. He'd started at the gallery the year after Mallory arrived, and had been her friend, confidant, and bitching partner ever since.
Don't go. We'll kill the bimbo. A little arsenic in her morning latte, and she's history.
He grabbed at the storage box.
Mal, love of my life, you can't leave me here.
I got the boot. A month's severance, a pat on the head, and a pack of homilies. She fought to keep the tears from blurring her vision as she looked around the lovely wide foyer, the streams of filtered light spilling over the glossy oak floor. God, what am I going to do tomorrow when I can't come here?
Oh, baby, here, give me that.
He took the box, gave her a little nudge with it.
Outside, so we can blubber.
I'm not going to blubber anymore. But she had to bite her lip when it quivered.
I am, he promised, and kept nudging until she was out the door.
He set the box down on one of the iron tables on the pretty covered porch, then flung his arms around her.
I can't stand it. Nothing's going to be the same without you here. Who will I gossip with? Who'll soothe my broken heart when some bastard breaks it? You notice this is all about me?
He made her laugh. You'll still be my best bud, right?
Sure I will. You're not going to do something crazy like move to the city.
He eased back to study her face. Or fall in with bad companions and work in a strip mall gift shop. A lead weight landed, kaboom, in her stomach. Those were the only two reasonable choices she had if she was going to make a living. But because he looked as if he might cry, she waved them away to bolster him. Perish, the thought. I don't know what I'm going to do exactly, but I've got this thing. She thought of her odd evening in the quay. I'll tell you about it later. I've got something to keep me occupied for a while. Then, I don't know, Todd. Everything's out of kilter. Maybe she was going to blubber a little after all. Nothing's the way it's supposed to be, so I can't see how it will be. Getting fired was not in the Mallory Price life plan.
It's just a blip, he assured her. James is in some sort of sexual haze. He could still come to his senses. You could sleep with him, he added, inspired. I could sleep with him.
I have one thing to say to both of those suggestions.
Ick. Profound and true. How about if I come by tonight, bring you Chinese and a cheap bottle of wine?
You're a pal.
We'll plot putrid Pamela's demise and plan your future. Want me to walk you home, sweetie pie?
Thanks, but I'll be fine. Give me time to clear my head. Say goodbye to everybody. I just can't face it now.
Don't you worry.
She tried not to worry as she walked home. She tried to ignore the panic that dogged her with every step she took away from routine and closer to that wide, wide canyon. She was young, educated, hardworking. She had money in the bank. Her whole life was ahead of her, like a blank canvas. All she had to do was choose her paints and get on with it. But right now, she needed to think of something else, anything else. She had a month to decide, and an intriguing task to perform in the meantime. It wasn't every day you were asked to find a mysterious key and play a part in saving souls. She would play along with that until she figured out the rest of her life. She'd given her word, after all, so she'd best get started on keeping it. Somehow. Right after she went home and buried her sorrows in a quart of Ben and Jerry's. As she came to the corner, she looked back, mistily, miserably, toward the gallery. Who was she kidding? That had been home. On a long sigh, she took a step and landed hard on her butt. Whatever had collided with her sent her box of possessions flying, then fell on top of her. She heard a grunt and what sounded like a yip. With the breath knocked out of her and what felt like a minor mountain pressing on her chest, she stared up into a hairy black face. Even as she fought for the breath to scream, an enormous tongue rolled out and slurped her face.
Mo! Stop! Heel! Get the hell off! Jesus, I'm sorry.
Mallory heard the voice, the light panic in it, as she gagged and turned her head to try to avoid the tongue. Abruptly, the huge black mass pinning her down grew arms, then a second head. This one was human. A great deal more attractive than the first, despite the sunglasses that slid down a sharp, straight nose and the grim set to the mouth. Are you all right? Are you hurt? He shoved the massive weight away, then squeezed his body between like a defensive wall. Can you sit up? The question was moot, as he was already pulling her from her ungainly sprawl to a sitting position. The dog tried to nose in, but was elbowed back. You lie down, you big sloppy idiot.
Not you, he added with a quick, charming grin, as he brushed Mallory's hair back from her face.
I'm sorry. He's harmless. Just clumsy and stupid.
What? What is it?
Moe's a dog. Or that's the rumor.
We think he's a cross between a cocker spaniel and a woolly mammoth.
I'm really sorry. My fault I wasn't paying enough attention, and he got away from me.
She slid her gaze to the right, where the dog, if it was a dog, was hunkered down, thumping a tail as thick as her arm and looking as innocent as anything that homely could manage.
You didn't hit your head, did you?
I don't think so. She found Moe's owner staring at her with a quiet intensity that made heat rush over her skin.
What?
She was as pretty as a bakery shop pastry. All that tumbled blonde hair, the top cream skin, the rosy bottom-heavy mouth that was in a sexy little sulk. Her eyes were big, blue, and beautiful, despite the temper flame shooting out of them. He nearly licked his lips when she scowled at him and lifted her hand to shove it through that terrific tangle of hair.
What are you staring at?
Just making sure you don't have little X's in your eyes. You went down pretty hard. Great eyes, by the way.
I'm Flynn. And I'm tired of sitting on the sidewalk. Do you mind?
Oh, yeah. He stood, took both her hands in both of his, and pulled her to her feet. He was taller than she'd realized, and she automatically stepped back so she didn't have to tip her face up to keep an eye on him. The sun was streaming over his hair, a lot of thick, wavy brown hair with hints of chestnut. His hands were still clasping hers, firmly enough that she felt the ridge of callus on them.
You sure you're all right? Steady?
You went down pretty hard.
I'm aware of that.
Painfully aware in the portion of her anatomy that had hit the sidewalk first. She crouched and began gathering what had spilled out of the box.
I'll get this stuff.
He crouched beside her, then stabbed a finger at the dog who was trying to inch his way toward them with the same stealth as an elephant tiptoeing across the African plain.
Stay, or there's no treat for you.
Just get your dog. I don't need any help here. She snatched up her emergency cosmetic bag, tossed it in the box. And when she saw that she'd chipped a nail, she wanted to curl into a ball of self-pity and wail. Instead, she selected the temper button.
You have no business being out on a public street with a dog of that size if you can't control him. He's just a dog. He doesn't know any better, but you're supposed to.
You're right. You're absolutely right. This must be yours. He held out a strapless black bra.
Mortified, Mallory grabbed it out of his hand, stuffed it in the box. Go away now. Go very, very far away.
Listen, why don't you let me carry that and carry your silly dog, she snapped, and hefting the box, strode away with as much dignity as she could muster. Flynn watched her go as Moe lumbered over to press his considerable weight against his master's side. Absently, Flynn patted the massive head and enjoyed the indignant sway of feminine hips in a short skirt. He doubted that run in her stocking had been there before her encounter with Moe, but from his perspective, it did nothing to detract from a pair of great legs.
Pretty, he said aloud as she slammed into a building halfway down the block.
And pretty steamed. He glanced down at the hopefully grinning Moe.
Nice job, jerk face.
After a hot shower, a change of clothes, and a medicinal bowl of cookie dough ice cream, Mallory headed for the library. She hadn't made any firm arrangements with her, she supposed they were her partners, the night before. As she was the first, she would have to be in charge. They needed to have some sort of meeting, to go over the clue, to plot out a plan of action. She didn't hold out any real hope of winning $1 million, but she wasn't going to shrug it off or go back on her word. She couldn't remember the last time she'd actually been in the library. For some reason, going in made her feel like a student again, full of naivete, hope, and an eagerness to learn. The main area wasn't large,
and the tables were mostly unoccupied. She saw an older man reading the newspaper, a few people wandering the stacks, a woman with a toddler in tow at the checkout counter. The place was so hushed, the ringing of a phone was like a shout. She glanced toward the sound and the central island of counter. Dana sat there, a phone at her ear, while her fingers clicked on a keyboard. Pleased that she wouldn't have to search the building to find her, Mallory walked over. She wagged her fingers as Dana nodded at her and finished the call. "I was hoping you'd come by. Didn't expect you this soon. I'm now a woman of leisure." "Oh," sympathy softened Dana's face. "You got canned?" "Canned, booted, axed, then knocked on my ass by an idiot and his dog on the way home. All in all, it's been a lousy day, even with the expansion of my bank account." "I have to say, I didn't believe it. Those two up on the peak are certifiable."
"Lucky for us. But still, we have to earn it. I'm first up, so I figure I need to get started. Somewhere."
"I'm ahead of you. Jan, will you take the desk?" As she rose, Dana gathered a stack of books from under the counter. "Come with me," she told Mallory. "There's a nice table by the window where you can work."
"Work at what?"
"Research. I've got several books on Celtic mythology, gods and goddesses, lore and legend. I'm going with the Celts since Rowena's from Wales and Pitt's Irish."
"How do you know he's Irish?"
"I don't. He sounded Irish. At this point, I know little or nothing about Celtic myths, and I figure it's the same for you and Zoe. I don't have a clue."
Dana set the books down with a muffled thud.
"So, we need to get one. I'm off in a few hours, then I can give you a hand. And I can call Zoe in if you like."
Mallory stared at the stack of books.
"Maybe that's a good idea. I don't know where to start."
"Pick one. I'll get you a notebook."
After an hour, Mallory needed an aspirin as well. When Zoe rushed up to sit at the table beside her, she took off her glasses and rubbed her tired eyes.
"Good. Reinforcements."
She shoved a book across the table.
"I'm sorry it took me so long. I was running errands. I bought Simon this video game he's been wanting. I know I probably shouldn't have spent the money, but I wanted to get him something just for fun. I've never had so much money in my life," she whispered. "I know I have to be careful with it, but if you can't do a little something fun, what's the point?"
"You don't have to sell me. And after you've been at this for a while, you'll know you've earned it. Welcome to the wacky world of the Celts. Dana's probably got another notebook. I brought my own." Out of an enormous bag, Zoe pulled a fresh notebook, thick as a brick, and a pack of pencils already sharpened to saber points. "It's sort of like going back to school."
Zoe's eager optimism cut through Mallory's foul mood. "Want to pass notes and talk about boys?"
Zoe just grinned and opened a book.
"We're going to find that key. I just know it."
By the time Dana joined them, Mallory had written reams of notes in the modified shorthand she'd developed in college, had drained her pen, and borrowed two of Zoe's pencils.
"Why don't we move this to my brother's place?" Dana suggested. "It's right around the corner. He's at work, so he won't be in the way. We can spread out a little, and you can give me the highlights."
"Fine with me." Stiff from sitting, Mallory got to her feet.
"I can only stay for about an hour. I like to be there when Simon gets home from school when I can."
"Then let's get started." "These books are on me," Dana said as she began gathering some up. "And anybody takes one home for personal research, I need it back in a timely fashion and in the same condition it was in when you took it."
"She really is a librarian."
Mallory tucked books under her arm.
"Bet your ass."
Dana led the way out. "I'm going to see what I can get off the nets and through interlibrary loan. I don't know how much we're going to get out of books." Dana slipped on her sunglasses, then tipped them down and peered at Mallory over the tops. "Anything worth anything can be found in books."
"Okay, now you're heading towards scary, library lady. What we need to do is figure out the clue. Without information on the story, the characters in it, we've got no base."
"We've got 4 whole weeks, Zoe put in, and dragged sunglasses out of her shoulder bag. "That's enough time to find out a lot of stuff, look in a lot of places. Pitt said the keys are around here, so it's not like we have the whole world to worry about. Around here could mean the valley or the highlands. It could mean the entire state of Pennsylvania. Mallory shook her head at the sheer scope and disorder. Pitt and Pal left it pretty wide open. Even if it's close by, it could be in someone's dusty drawer, on the bottom of the river, in a bank vault, or buried under a rock.
If it was easy, somebody else would have found it by now, Zoe pointed out, and the grand prize wouldn't be $3 million.
Don't be sensible while I'm crabbing.
Sorry, but there's another thing I was wondering. I couldn't sleep last night, going over and over the whole evening in my head. It's all so unreal. But even if you set all that aside for 1 minute, even if we're optimistic and say you find the key, how do we know it's your key and not one of the other two?
Interesting. Mallory shifted her load of books as they turned the corner.
How come the weird twins didn't think of that?
I figure they did. See, first you have to say it's all real.
Dana shrugged. We've all got money in the bank, and we're walking along with a load of books on Celtic myths. That's real enough for me.
If it's all real, then Mallory can only find the first key. Even if the other two were right in front of her, she wouldn't find them, and we wouldn't either, not before it's our turn to look.
Dana stopped, angling her head as she studied Zoe.
Do you really believe all this?
Zoe flushed, but gave a careless shrug.
I'd like to.
It's so fantastic and important. I've never done anything fantastic or important.
She looked up at the narrow three-story Victorian painted a soft slate blue with creamy gingerbread trim.
Is this your brother's house? I've always thought it was so pretty.
He's been fixing it up bit by bit. Kind of a hobby.
They started up the brick walk. The grass was green and trim on either side, but it needed flowers, Mallory thought. Color and shape and texture. And an old bench on the porch next to a big copper pot full of interesting sticks and grasses. The house looked lonely without them. Like a perfectly attractive woman, she thought, who'd been stood up for a date.
Dana took out a key, unlocked the door. The best I can say about the inside is it'll be quiet.
She stepped in, and her voice echoed.
And private.
The foyer was empty, but for a few boxes shoved into a corner. The stairway leading up was a lovely, fanciful curve with a griffin head as its newel post. The foyer spilled into a parlor, where the walls were painted a rich, shady river green that went well with the warm, honey-toned pine of the floor. But the walls, like the yard, were naked. There was a huge sofa in the middle of the floor, the sort that shouted to Mallory, "A man bought me!" Despite the fact that some of the green in it matched the walls, it was a hideous plaid, clunky of style and too large for the charm potential of the room. Some sort of crate stood in as a table. There were more boxes, one of which sat on the hearth of a delightful little fireplace with an ornately carved mantel that she could envision dressing up with a fabulous painting.
So, Zoe turned in a circle. I guess he's just moving in?
Oh, yeah. For the last year and a half.
Dana laid her books on the crate.
He's lived here for over a year?
It hurt, simply hurt Mallory's heart.
And his single piece of furniture is this really ugly couch?
Hey, you should have seen his room at home. At least this is neat.
Anyway, he's got some halfway decent stuff upstairs. That's where he lives. There's probably not any food, but there'll be coffee, beer, Coke. Anybody?
Diet Coke? Mallory asked.
Dana sneered.
He's a guy.
Right. I live dangerously and have the real thing.
Coke's fine, Zoe agreed.
Coming up.
Go ahead and sit. The couch is an eyesore, but it's comfortable.
All this wonderful space wasted, Mallory decided, on a man who would actually pay money for something like this.
She dropped down on the couch.
Okay, it's comfortable, but it's still ugly.
Can you imagine living in a place like this?
Zoe turned a quick circle.
It's like a doll's house. Well, a really big doll's house, but just as sweet. I'd spend all my free time playing with it, hunting for treasures to put in it, fussing with paint and fabric. So would I. Mallory tilted her head. At her very best, she thought, she would never look as hip and exotic as Zoe managed to do in simple jeans and a cotton shirt. And she'd done the math, calculating how old Zoe had been when she'd had her baby. At that same age, Mallory had been shopping for the perfect prom dress and preparing for college. And yet here they were, together in a largely empty room of a stranger's house and having nearly identical thoughts. It's strange how much we have in common. Strange, too, that we live in a relatively small town and never met before last night. Zoe sat on the opposite end of the couch. Where do you get your hair done? Carmine's, out at the mall. That's a good salon. Hair today, here in town, where I worked. It's mostly women who want the same do week after week after week. She rolled her big, tawny eyes. Can't blame you for heading out of town. You've got great hair. Did your stylist ever suggest that you take a couple inches off? Cut? Instinctively, Mallory's hand went to her hair. Cut? Just a couple inches. Take some of the weight off. It's a terrific color. It's mine. Well, I get it punched up a bit. She laughed and dropped her hand. I get the feeling you're looking at my hair the way I'm looking at this room, wondering just what I could do with it if I had a free hand. Cokes and cookies. Dana brought in a trio of cans and a bag of store-bought chocolate chip cookies. So, what have we got so far? I didn't find anything that mentions three daughters of a young god and a mortal woman. Mallory popped the top and sipped, though she would have preferred a glass and some ice. Jesus, this stuff is so sweet when you're not used to it. I also didn't find anything about trapped souls or keys. A lot of strange-looking names like Lug and Rihanna, Anu, Danu, Tales of Battles, Victories, and Death. She took out her notebook, flipped it open to the first neatly arranged page. One look at it had Dana's dimples popping out. I bet you were an A student all the way through school, honor roll, dean's list, fucking the curve for the rest of the class. Why? You're too organized not to be. You made an outline and everything. She snatched the notebook, turned pages. And timelines, charts. Shut up. Laughing at herself, Mallory grabbed the notebook back. As I was saying, before being snickered at for my organized research style, Celtic gods die. They appear to pop back, but they can actually be killed. And unlike what I know about the gods in Greek and Roman mythology, these don't live on some magic mountaintop. They inhabit the earth, live among people, lots of politics and protocol. Dana sat on the floor. Anything that could be a metaphor for the keys? If it was there, it was over my head. Artists were gods and warriors, Zoe added. Or the other way around. I mean, art, music, storytelling, all that was important. And there were mother goddesses. Motherhood was important. And the number three. So it's like Mallory's the artist. It was a quick and painful twist in Mallory's heart. No, I sell art. You know art, Zoe said, like Dana knows books. I know about being a mother. That's good, Dana beamed at her. That gives each of us our role in this. Pitt said, beauty, truth, courage. In the painting, Mallory, let's simplify by calling them by our names for now, Mallory was playing an instrument, music, art, beauty. I was holding a scroll and quill, book, knowledge, truth. And Zoe had the sword and the puppy, innocence, protection, courage. Which means, Mallory demanded, we could say the first key, your key, is somewhere that has to do with art and or beauty. That goes along with the clue. Great. I'll pick it up on my way home. Mallory nudged a book with her toe. What if they just made it up? The whole story. I refuse to believe they made the whole thing up just to have us scrambling around looking for keys. Thoughtfully, Dana bit into a cookie. No matter what we believe, they believe it's true. So there's got to be some root, some basis for this legend or myth or story they told us last night. If there's a root, it's in a book, somewhere.
Actually, Zoe hesitated, then went on. The book I was reading talked about how a lot of the Celtic mythology and legends didn't get written down. They were passed orally.
Those damn bards, Dana muttered. Look, Pitt and Rowena heard it somewhere, and whoever told them heard it from someone else. The information is out there, and information is my god.
Maybe what we have to do is get information on Pitt and Rowena.
Who the hell are they?
Mallory spread her hands.
Where do they come from? Where do they get the kind of money that allows them to pass it out like cupcakes?
You're right. Annoyed with herself, Dana blew out a breath. You're absolutely right. And I should have thought of that before. It happens I know somebody who can help us with that while we're looking into the myth.
She glanced toward the doorway. She heard the front door open.
And here he comes now.
They heard a thud, a slam, a scramble, and a curse. It was just familiar enough to have Mallory pressing her fingers to her temples.
Holy Mother of God.
Even as she spoke, the huge black dog raced in. His tail swung like a demolition ball, his tongue lolled, and his eyes went bright as stars as he spotted Mallory. He let out a series of ear-shattering barks, then leaped into her lap.
Chapter 4 Flynn saw three things when he charged into the room after his dog. His sister, sitting on the floor laughing like a lunatic. A sharp-looking brunette standing at the end of the couch, heroically trying to dislodge Mo. And to his surprise and delight, the woman he'd been thinking about for the better part of the day, mostly buried under Mo's bulk and insane affections.
Okay, Mo, down. I mean it. That's enough.
He didn't expect the dog to listen. He always tried. Mo never listened, but it seemed the right thing to do as he gripped the dog around the barrel of his belly. He had to lean down. Well, maybe not quite as far as he did, but she had the prettiest blue eyes, even when they were shooting daggers at him.
Hi! Nice to see you again.
Muscles jumped in her jaw when she clenched it.
Get him off!
Working on it!
Hey, Mo! Dana shouted. Cookie!
That did the trick. Mo leaped over the crate, nipped the cookie out of the hand Dana held in the air, then landed. It might have been a graceful landing if he hadn't skidded several feet over the uncarpeted floor.
Works like a charm.
Dana lifted her arm. Mo loped back, the cookie already history, and insinuated his bulk under it.
Wow, he's really a big dog.
Zoe eased over, held out a hand, then grinned when Mo licked it lavishly.
Friendly.
Pathologically friendly. Mallory brushed at the dog hair that had transferred itself to her once pristine linen shirt.
That's the second time today he's landed on me.
He likes girls. Flynn took off his sunglasses, tossed them on the crate.
You never told me your name.
Oh, so you're the idiot and his dog.
Should have known.
This is Mallory Price, Dana said, and Zoe McCourt. My brother, Flynn.
Are you Michael Flynn Hennessy?
Zoe crouched to stroke Moe's ear, looked up at Flynn under her bangs.
M.F. Hennessy with the Valley Dispatch?
Guilty.
I've read a lot of your articles, and I never miss your column. I liked the one last week on the proposed ski lift up on Lone Ridge and the environmental impact.
Thanks. He reached down for a cookie. Is this a book club meeting, and will there be cake?
No, but if you've got a minute, maybe you could sit down.
Dana patted the floor. We'll tell you what it is.
Sure.
But he sat on the couch.
Mallory Price?
The gallery, right?
Not anymore,
she grimaced.
I've been in a couple times. Must have missed you.
I don't cover arts and entertainment. I see the error of my ways. His eyes, she noted, were the same color as the walls, that lazy river green.
I doubt we have anything to offer that could complement your decor.
You hate the couch, right?
Hate is much too mild a word. It's very comfortable. He glanced over at Zoe's comment and smiled. It's a napping couch. You nap, your eyes are closed, so you don't care what it looks like. Celtic mythology, he read, angling his head to read the titles on the books scattered over the crate. Myths and legends of the Celts. He picked one up, turned it in his hands as he studied his sister. What gives? I told you I was going to that cocktail party at Warrior's Peak. His face went hard the instant the affable smile faded. I thought you weren't going because I said there had to be something off about that since nobody I talked to got an invitation. Dana picked up her Coke can, gave him a mildly interested look. Do you actually think I listened to you? No. Okay, then. Here's what happened. She'd barely begun when he turned away from her and those green eyes sharpened on Mallory's face. You got an invitation?
Yes.
And you? He nodded at Zoe. What do you do, Zoe?
Right now, I'm an unemployed hairdresser, but...
Married?
No.
Neither are you, he said as he looked at Mallory again. No ring, no I'm married vibe. How long have the three of you known each other? Flynn, stop doing a damn interview. Just let me tell you what happened.
Dana started again, and this time he boosted a hip off the couch, took a notebook out of his back pocket. Doing her best to appear as if she wasn't the least bit interested in what he was doing, Mallory slid her gaze to the left and down. He used shorthand, she realized, and real shorthand, not any sort of bastardized version as she did. She tried to decipher it as Dana spoke, but it made her a little dizzy. The Daughters of Glass, Flynn muttered, and kept scribbling.
What?
Without thinking, Mallory reached over and clamped her fingers on his wrist. You know this story?
A version of it, anyway.
Since he had her attention, he shifted toward her. His knee bumped hers. My Irish granny told me a lot of stories.
Why didn't you recognize it? Mallory asked Dana.
She didn't have my Irish granny.
Actually, were steps, Dana explained. My father married his mother when I was 8. Or my mother married her father when I was 11. It's all point of view.
He reached up to toy with the ends of Mallory's hair, grinned easily when she batted his fingers aside.
Sorry, there's just so much of it, it's irresistible. Anyway, my granny liked to tell stories, so I heard plenty of them. This one sounds like the Daughters of Glass, which doesn't explain why the three of you were invited up to the peak to listen to a fairy tale.
We're supposed to find the keys, Zoe put in, and snuck a peek at her watch.
You're supposed to find the keys to unlock their souls?
Cool.
He stretched out to prop his feet on the crate, crossed his ankles.
Now it's my duty to ask how, when, and why.
If you'd shut up for 5 minutes, I'd tell you. Dana reached for her Coke and drained it. Mallory goes first. She has 28 days, starting today, to find the first key. When she does, Zoe or I go next. Same drill. Then the last of us gets her shot.
Where's the box?
The box of souls.
Dana frowned as Mo deserted her to sniff Mallory's toes.
I don't know. They must have it. Pitt and Rowena. If they don't, the keys won't do them any good.
You're telling me you're buying this, Miss Steeped in Reality, and you're going to spend the next few weeks looking for keys that open a magic glass box that holds the souls of three goddesses?
Demigoddesses. Mallory nudged Mo with her foot to discourage him. And it isn't a matter of what we believe. It's a business deal.
They paid us $25,000 each, Dana offered, in advance.
$25,000?
Get out!
The money's been deposited in our bank accounts. It's been verified.
Forgetting herself, Mallory reached for a cookie. Mo immediately dropped his heavy head on her knee. Could you call off your dog?
Not as long as you've got cookies.
These two people, whom you don't know, gave each of you 25 grand to look for magic keys? Did they have any beans for sale? A golden goose, maybe.
The money's real, Mallory said stiffly.
And what if you don't deliver? What's the penalty?
We lose a year.
You're what? Indentured to them for a year?
A year gets taken away from us.
Zoe looked at her watch again. She really had to go.
What year?
She gave him a blank look.
Well, the last year, I guess.
When we're old.
Or this year, he said, and pushed to his feet. Or next. Or 10 years back, if we're being weird, which we sure as hell are.
No, that can't be.
Pale now, Zoe shook her head.
It can't be from before. That would change everything.
What if it's the year I had Simon? Or the year I got pregnant? That can't be.
No, it can't, because none of this can be.
He shook his head and looked down at his sister.
Where's your head, Dana?
Didn't it occur to you that when you don't come up with the goods, these people might hurt you? Nobody dumps that kind of money on strangers.
Which means you're not strangers to them. For whatever reason, they know you. They've looked into you.
You weren't there, Dana said. Eccentric is definitely apt in their case. Psychotic isn't.
Besides, there's no motive for them to hurt us.
He spun back to Mallory. No, he wasn't affable now, she realized, but annoyed, and working his way rapidly to irate.
And there is one for them to dump big gobs of money on you?
I've got to go. Zoe's voice shook as she grabbed her bag. I have to get to Simon, my son.
She streaked out, and Dana leaped to her feet.
Nice job, Flynn. Very nice job, scaring the single mother witless.
She bolted after Zoe, hoping to calm her. He jammed his hands in his pockets, stared hard at Mallory.
You scared?
No, but I don't have a 9-year-old boy to worry about, and I don't believe Pitt or Rowena wants to hurt us. Besides, I can take care of myself.
Why do women always say that after they've gotten themselves in a really big jam?
Because men usually come along and make things worse.
I'm going to look for the key, as I agreed to do. We all are.
So would you.
She had him there.
He jingled the change in his pocket, considered, cooled off.
What did they tell you would happen if you found the keys?
The souls would be unlocked, and we'd each get $1 million.
And yes, I know how ridiculous that sounds. You had to be there.
And when you add that these three goddesses are currently sleeping in crystal beds in a castle behind the curtain of dreams, I guess you did have to be there.
They have a painting of the Daughters of Glass. They look like us.
It's a brilliant painting.
I know art, Hennessy, and this is no paint-by-numbers deal. It's a goddamn masterpiece. It has to mean something.
His face sharpened with interest.
Who painted it?
It wasn't signed. Not that I could see.
Then how do you know it's a masterpiece?
Because I know. It's what I do.
Whoever painted it has an amazing talent and a great love and respect for the subject matter. That sort of thing shows. And if they'd wanted to hurt us, why didn't they do something last night when we were all there? Dana was there, alone with them, before I arrived. Why not bash her over the head and chain her in the dungeon, then do the same with me and Zoe? Or drug the wine?
I've already thought about all that, already asked myself all the questions, and I'll tell you why.
Because they believe everything they told us.
And this eases your mind?
Okay, who are they? Where do they come from? How did they get here? Why did they come here? This isn't exactly Mystic Central.
Why didn't you find out instead of scaring people?
Dana demanded as she returned.
Is Zoe okay? Mallory asked her.
Sure, she's just great now that she has visions of somebody using your kid as a human sacrifice.
She punched Flynn in the shoulder.
Hey, you didn't want somebody to point out the flaws in the plan. You shouldn't have had your party at my place.
So tell me everything you know about this Rowena and Pitt.
He took more notes, managing to hold back any scathing comments on the lack of information.
Anybody still got the invitation?
He took the one Mallory pulled out of her bag.
I'll see what I can find out.
Did your grandmother's story say anything about where the keys were hidden?
No. Just that they couldn't be turned by the hand of the gods, which leaves a pretty open field.
Flynn waited until Mallory left, then crooked a finger so Dana would follow him into the kitchen. As rooms went, it was a sad statement. With its ancient copper-tone appliances, white with gold-speckled countertops, and fake brick linoleum floor. When are you going to do something about this room? It's awful. All in good time, my pretty, all in good time. He got a beer out of the fridge, wagged it at her. Yeah, why not? He got out a second, popped the tops on the wall opener that was in the shape of a bikini-clad blonde with a toothy grin. Now, tell me what you know about the very sexy Mallory Price of the big blue eyes.
I just met her last night.
Uh-uh. He held back the beer. Women know stuff about women, like telepathically. The more a woman likes or dislikes another woman, the more she knows. There have been several scientific studies to verify this phenomenon. Give, or no beer for you. She hadn't particularly wanted the beer until he'd used it as a hammer.
Why do you want to know about her specifically?
Why not Zoe? My interest in Zoe is more academic. I can hardly start the wild and passionate affair I have in mind with Mallory until I know all her secrets and desires. You're going to make me sick, Flynn. He merely tipped up his beer, took a long, slow sip, while holding hers out of reach. I'm not your silly dog who'll beg for cookies. I'm only going to tell you so I can sit back and laugh derisively when she blows you off. I do like her, she added, and held out a hand for the beer. She strikes me as smart, ambitious, open-minded without being naive. She worked at the gallery, just got canned over a dispute with the owner's new trophy wife. Since Mallory called the new wife a bimbo to her face, I'd say she doesn't always rate high on the tact and diplomacy scale, but calls them like she sees them. She likes good clothes and knows how to wear them. Spends too much on them, which is why she was broke before this morning's windfall. She's not currently in a relationship and would like to own her own business. You really buried the lead. He took a long, slow sip. So she's not dating anyone, and she's gutsy. Not only does she tell off the boss's wife, but she drives alone, at night, to the spookiest house in western Pennsylvania. So did I. I can't have a mad, passionate affair with you, sweetie. It would just be wrong. Now, there, you have made me sick. But she smiled when he leaned over and kissed her cheek. Why don't you move in here for a couple weeks? Her dark, chocolate eyes went baleful. Stop looking out for me, Flynn. Can't do it. If I wouldn't move in when I was broke, why would I now that I'm flush? You know I like my own space, and you do too, such as it is. And the goblins of Warrior's Peak are not going to come down and spirit me away in the night. If they were goblins, they wouldn't worry me. But because he knew her, he eased off. How about telling your new pal Mallory what an amazing man I am, all brainy and sensitive and buff? You want me to lie to her? You're mean, Dana. He gulped down more beer. You're just mean. When he was alone, Flynn settled down in his upstairs study. He preferred the term study to office, as an office meant work. No way around it. In a study, you could, well, study, or nap, or read, or stare into space thinking long thoughts. You could certainly work, but it wasn't a requirement. He'd outfitted the room with a big, brawny desk and a couple of wide leather chairs that he thought felt as if you might sink into them until you disappeared. He had files as well, but he disguised them with manly-looking chests. One wall was covered with framed prints of pin-up girls from the 40s and 50s. If all else failed, he could kick back, study them, and pass an enjoyable hour in solitude. He booted up his computer, stepped over Mo, who had already flopped in the middle of the floor, and pulled a second beer out of the mini-fridge he'd installed under a work counter. He'd considered that idea pretty damn clever. Then he sat, rolled his head as a boxer might before a round, and got down to some serious surfing. If there was anything in the cyber world about the new residents of Warrior's Peak, he would find it. As always, he got sucked into the siren song of information. His beer went warm. 1 hour passed into two headed toward three, before Mo solved the matter by giving the desk chair a push that shot it and Flynn halfway across the room. Damn it, you know I hate that. I just need a few more minutes. But Mo had heard that one before,
and he protested by plopping massive paws and a great deal of body weight onto Flynn's thighs. So, maybe we'll take a walk. And if we happen to wander by a certain blonde's door, we could just stop in and share currently gathered information. And if that doesn't work, we'll pick up some pizza so it won't be a complete loss. The word pizza had Mo tearing to the doorway. By the time Flynn made it downstairs, the dog was by the front door, his leash clamped between his teeth. It was a nice evening for a walk, quiet, balmy, with his little postcard town basking under the late summer sun. At such moments, when the air was soft, the breeze fragrant, he was glad he'd made the decision to take over the dispatch from his mother rather than heading out to make his mark at some big city paper. A lot of his friends had gone to the city, and the woman he'd thought he loved had chosen New York over him. Or he'd chosen the valley over her. It depended, he supposed, on your point of view. Maybe the news here didn't have the scope or the edge of the news in Philly or New York, but there was still plenty of it. And what happened in the valley, in the hills and mountains that surrounded it, mattered. And just now he scented a story that would be bigger and juicier than anything the dispatch had reported in the 68 years since its presses began to run. If he could help three women, one of whom was a sister he loved very much, flirt with an incredibly attractive blonde, and expose a major con, well, that would be a hell of a hat trick. "You have to be charming," he told Mo as they approached the trim brick building that he'd watched Mallory enter that morning. "You act like a dog. We'll never get through the door." As a precaution, Flynn wrapped the leash twice around his fist before going into the 12-unit building. He considered it good luck that M. Price was on the ground floor. Not only would he not have to drag Mo up steps or pull him into an elevator, but the building's ground level had little patios. That gave him the option of bribing Mo with the cookie he'd stuffed in his pocket and staking him outside. "Charming," he said again, sotto voce, giving Mo a narrow stare before he knocked on Mallory's door. Her greeting, when she answered, wasn't what he would call flattering. She took one look at him and Mo. "Oh, my God, you've got to be kidding." "I can put him outside," Flynn said quickly, "but we really need to talk. He'll dig up my flowers." "He doesn't dig." "Please, God, don't dig," he thought. I can't say the C word or he'll get excited, but I've got one in my pocket. I'll just put him out there, out of the way. "I don't..." Mo's nose arrowed straight into her crotch. "Christ!" In defense, she skipped back, which was all the invitation Mo required. He was through the door, dragging Flynn merrily over an antique Turkish carpet, barely missing slapping his lethal tail into a deco vase filled with late summer lilies. Terrified, Mallory made a dash for her patio door, yanked it open. "Out! Out! Straight out!" It was a word Mo knew. And he objected to going out when he'd just come in to so many fascinating scents. He simply dropped his wide butt on the floor and dug in. With dignity no longer an option, Flynn hooked both hands in Moe's collar and dragged him bodily across the room and out the door. "Oh, yeah, that was charming." Out of breath, Flynn looped the leash around the trunk of a tree, and as Mo began to howl, he dropped to his knees. "Stop it. Have you no pride? Have you no sense of masculine solidarity? How am I going to get my hands on that woman if she hates us?" He pushed his face into Mo's. "Lie down and be quiet. Do this for me, and the world is yours, starting with this." He pulled out the cookie. The howling stopped instantly, and the tail began to thump. "Screw this up, and next time I leave you home." He stood up and sent what he hoped was an easy smile toward Mallory, who stood warily on the other side of the door. He figured it was a major victory when she opened it and let him in. "Have you tried obedience school?" she demanded. "Well, yeah, but there was an incident. We don't like to talk about it. This is a great place." "Stylish, arty and female, he decided. Not delicate little trinket female, but bold, unique, fascinating female. The walls were a deep, rich rose, a strong background for the paintings. She favored antiques or reproductions that looked enough like the real thing to pass. Soft fabrics and sleek sculpture, and everything tidy as a shiny new pin. It smelled female, classily so, from the lilies and the dried flower petals that women were forever putting in bowls, and he supposed from the woman herself. She had music on low. What was that? Annie Lennox? Crooning slyly about sweet dreams. It seemed to Flynn that the entire place spoke of very specific, very high-toned taste. He wandered over to a painting of a woman rising up out of a dark blue pool. There was a sense of speed about it, of sexuality, and of power. She's beautiful. Does she live in the sea or on the land? Mallory arched her brow. At least he'd asked an intelligent question. I think she has yet to choose. She pondered him as he wandered around. He seemed more, well, male, she supposed, here in her place, than he had on the sidewalk or stalking around the largely unfurnished room in his own house. What are you doing here?
First, I came because I wanted to see you again.
Why?
You're really pretty.
Because he found it both relaxing and entertaining to look at her, he hooked his thumbs in his front pockets and did just that. You might think that's a shallow reason, but I like to think it's simply basic. If people didn't like looking at attractive things, we wouldn't have any art. How long did it take you to think of that one? His grin was fast and appreciative. Not long at all. I'm pretty quick. Have you had dinner?
No, but I have plans. Why else are you here?
Let's do this part first. You haven't had dinner tomorrow night yet. Would you like to have dinner with me?
I don't think that's a good idea.
Because you're annoyed with me? Or because you're not interested?
You're pretty annoying.
Those lazy river eyes flirted.
Not once you get to know me.
Ask anybody.
No, she had a feeling he wouldn't stay annoying.
He'd be entertaining and interesting. And trouble. Plus, however attractive he was anything but her type.
I've got enough on my plate without dating a man who has terrible taste in furniture and questionable taste in pets.
She glanced toward the patio as she said it, then couldn't stop the laugh when she saw Moe's ugly face pressed hopefully against the glass.
You don't really hate dogs.
Of course I don't hate dogs. I like dogs. She angled her head to study the furry face.
I don't think that is a dog.
They swore he was when I got him from the pound.
Her eyes went soft.
You got him from the pound?
Aha! A chink in the defensive wall.
He stepped over so they could study Mo together. He was a lot smaller then. I went in to do a story on the shelter, and he sort of came, well, gambling up to me. Looked at me like he was saying, "Okay, I've been waiting for you to show. Let's go home." I was a goner.
What does Mo stand for?
Mountain?
He looks like Mo.
You know, Mo Howard.
When her face stayed blank, Flynn sighed.
Women, they don't know what they're missing when it comes to the courageous comedy and wit of the Three Stooges.
Yes, yes, we do know what we're missing. We miss it on purpose.
Realizing they were standing close, she took a deliberate step back. Was there something else?
I started running down these people you guys are tangled up with. Liam Pitt, Rowena O'Mara, at least those are the names they're using.
Why shouldn't those be their names?
Because when I use my incredible skills and talents, I found no record of anyone under those names that jibes with the new owners of Warrior's Peak. No social security numbers, no passport numbers, no driver's licenses, business licenses, no corporate paper trail for this triad, at least none that connects to them.
They're not American, she began, then blew out of breath.
Okay, no passport numbers.
Maybe you didn't find it yet.
And maybe they've used different names to buy the house.
Maybe. It'll be interesting to find out, because right now it's looking like they popped out of thin air.
I'd like to know more about the Daughters of Glass. The more I know about them, the better chance I have of finding the key.
I'll call my grandmother, get more details of the legend. I can fill you in over dinner tomorrow.
She considered him, then looked back toward the dog.
He was willing to help, and she only had 4 weeks.
On a personal front, she would keep it simple. Friendly, but simple.
At least until she decided what to do about him.
Would that be a table for two or three?
Two!
All right. You can pick me up at 7.
Great!
And you can go out that way.
She pointed toward the patio door.
No problem.
He walked to the door, glanced back.
You really are pretty, he said, then eased the door open just enough to squeeze out.
She watched him unhook the dog, watched him stagger under the weight when Mo leaped up to lavishly kiss his face. She waited until they'd trotted off before she chuckled.
Chapter 5. Mallory found Zoe's little house easily enough. It was a tiny box on a narrow stamp of lawn, but it had been painted a cheerful yellow with bright white trim. A colorful patch of flowers bloomed vigorously along either side of the door. Even if Mallory hadn't been sure of the address, hadn't recognized Zoe's car parked at the curb, she'd have known the house by the boy in the yard, tossing a ball high in the air, then racing to catch it. He looked almost eerily like his mother. The dark hair, the long-lidded eyes, and the pixie face. He had a slight build, clad in ripped jeans and a Pittsburgh Pirates t-shirt. When he spotted Mallory, he stood, legs apart, flipping the ball lightly into the pocket of his glove. He had the cautious and somewhat arrogant stance of a boy who'd had "don't talk to strangers" drummed into his head, and thought he was old enough, smart enough, to handle himself with one anyway.
"You must be Simon. I'm Mallory Price, a friend of your mother's."
She kept a smile on her face as the boy sized her up, and she wished she knew more about baseball than that it involved a number of men throwing, hitting, and trying to catch a ball and running around a field.
"She's in the house. I can get her."
His way of doing so was to trot toward the door and shout, "Mom! There's a lady out here to see you!" Moments later, Zoe opened the screen door, stood there wiping her hands on a dish towel. Somehow, despite the baggy shorts, old shirt, and bare feet, she still managed to look exotic.
"Oh, Mallory!"
She lifted a hand to fiddle with one of the buttons of her shirt. "I wasn't expecting...
If this is a bad time..."
"No, no, of course not. Simon, this is Miss Price, one of the ladies I'm going to be working with for a while."
"Okay. Hi. Can I go over to Scott's now? I finished mowing the lawn."
"Looks great. Do you want a snack first?"
"Nuh-uh."
At her arch look, he grinned, showing a missing tooth and sudden, dazzling charm.
"I mean, no thanks."
"Go ahead, then. Have a good time."
"Yes!"
He started to race off, then skidded to a halt when she spoke his name in a tone that Mallory assumed mothers developed through hormonal changes during gestation. He rolled his eyes, but made sure his back was to Zoe as he did. Then he gave Mallory a quick and easy smile.
"Nice to meet you and all."
"Nice to meet you and all, too, Simon." He dashed off like an inmate escaping the prison walls.
"He's gorgeous."
At Mallory's statement, Zoe's face lit up with pride and pleasure.
"He really is, isn't he?
Sometimes I'll sneak to the window while he's out in the yard and just look at him. He's my whole world."
"I could see that.
And now you're worried that what we've done could hurt him somehow."
"Worrying about Simon is part of my job description."
"Listen, I'm sorry. Come on in. I used to spend Saturdays at the salon, so I thought I'd take advantage of having this one off and dig in around here."
"You've got a pretty house."
She stepped inside the door, looked around.
"A very pretty house."
"Thanks." Zoe looked around as well, grateful that she'd finished buffing up the living room. The pillows were plumped on the bright and cheery blue slipcovers of the sofa, and the old coffee table she'd antiqued was free of dust and held a trio of bottles filled with late summer daisies snipped from her own little flower bed. The rug her grandmother had hooked when Zoe herself was a child was freshly vacuumed.
"These are great."
Mallory wandered over to look at the framed prints of foreign locales grouped on a wall. "They're just postcards I matted and framed. I always ask customers to pick me up a postcard when they go on a trip. They're really clever and fun. I like to, you know, put things together. Find stuff at yard sales or flea markets and haul it home. Fix it up. It makes it yours that way. Plus, it doesn't cost a lot of money. Would you like something to drink?" "I would, if I'm not holding you up."
"No.
I don't think I've had a Saturday off in..." She skimmed her fingers through her hair. "Ever," she decided. "It's nice to be home, and to have company." Mallory had a feeling that she was about to be invited to sit down while Zoe went back to the kitchen. To avoid that, she walked over and angled herself toward the doorway. "Did you plant the flowers yourself?"
"Simon and I did."
With no choice, Zoe led the way into the kitchen. "I don't have any soft drinks. Sorry, but I can't keep them around with Simon. I've got some lemonade."
"That's great."
She'd obviously caught Zoe in the midst of a major kitchen cleaning, but still the room exuded the same casual charm as the living area.
"I love this."
She trailed a finger over the mint green paint of a cupboard. "It really shows what someone can do with imagination, taste, and time."
"Wow."
Zoe took a squat glass pitcher out of the refrigerator. "That's quite a compliment coming from somebody like you. I mean, somebody who knows art. I wanted to have pretty things, but still make a place where Simon could run around like a boy. And it's just the right size for us. I don't care about the $1 million. She set her company glasses on the counter, shook her head. "Boy, does that sound stupid. Of course I care about the $1 million. What I mean is, I don't need a million. I just want enough so we're secure. I only got into this because it seemed so interesting, and because the $25,000 was like a miracle, and because that night up at Warrior's Peak was so compelling, so dramatic," Mallory said, "like we were all the stars of our own movie."
"Yes."
Zoe let out a laugh as she poured. "I got caught up in the idea of it all, but I never considered, not for a minute, that we'd be taking any kind of risk. I don't know that we are. I'm not going to worry about that until we know more, but I don't have a child to consider. I wanted to come by and say that if you want to back out, I understand. I've been thinking about it. One of the advantages of serious cleaning is it's good thinking time. Do you want to take these out in the back? I've got some chairs out there. It's kind of a nice spot." They walked out, and it was a nice spot. That tidy little yard, the two Adirondack chairs painted the same sunny yellow as the house, and a big shady maple tree. Once they were seated, Zoe took a deep breath. "If Pitt and Rowena are some kind of lunatics who've targeted us for some reason, there's no backing out. It won't matter. And if they are, doing whatever we can to find the keys makes the most sense. If they're not, then we should keep our word. It sounds like we're on the same track. I'm toying with going back up there to talk to them again, get another impression. In a day or two," Mallory nodded, "after we, I hope, find out a little more. I know Dana will be zeroing in on the books, and Flynn's already heating up the internet. If he finds anything, he'll tell me at dinner tonight."
"Dinner? You're going out with Flynn?"
"Apparently." Mallory frowned into her lemonade. 5 minutes after he left my apartment, I was wondering how he talked me into it.
"He's awfully cute.
Any guy would look cute beside that big, ugly dog.
And he was flirting with you."
Zoe gestured with her glass so that ice clinked.
"Big time.
That I got. Flirting isn't on the agenda for the next few weeks if I'm going to focus on finding the first key. Flirting with a cute guy is a nice side benefit." Zoe sighed, sat back, and wiggled toes that she painted poppy pink. "Or at least I seem to recall it was, from the dim, dark past. Are you kidding? Surprised, Mallory looked back at Zoe's sexy fairy face. Men must hit on you all the time.
The initial sortie usually stops dead when they find out I've got a kid.
She shrugged. And I'm not interested in the let's get naked and keep it casual deal. I've been there. Right now, I'm not interested in the let's get naked and make it serious deal. I have to figure out what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. My current windfall isn't going to last forever, but it does give me time to decide if I really want my own business and how to go about it if I do.
That's something else I was thinking about today. I'm going to have to get back to work, but the thought of starting a new job with new people out at the mall...
Zoe puffed out her cheeks and blew a hard breath. And the last thing I want to do is to try to run a salon out of the house. Nobody takes you seriously when you do that. They start thinking hair's your hobby instead of your job. Plus, where you live isn't home anymore, and I'm not taking that away from Simon the way it was taken away from me.
Your mother did hair out of your house?
Trailer. Zoe shrugged. She did the best she could, considering we lived a couple miles outside nowhere, West Virginia. My daddy took off when I was 12, and I was the oldest of four.
That's rough. I'm sorry.
Rough on all of us, but like I said, she did the best she could. I'm just hoping to do better.
I'd say making a pretty house and home for you and your son means you're doing absolutely fine.
Color washed into her face.
Thanks.
Anyway, I thought I'd start scouting around, see if I could find a place for rent that I could outfit for a salon. If you find one, see if you can find a nice storefront for me in my artwork shop.
With a laugh, Mallory set her glass aside. Or maybe we should just combine the two and go into business together. Art and beauty, one-stop shopping.
I've got to go.
She rose.
I'm going to swing by and see Dana, then go home and see if I can get a brainstorm over that stupid clue. You want a plan for the three of us to get together one day early next week? A powwow?
Fine with me, as long as we can work around Simon's schedule.
We can do that.
I'll call you.
She didn't know if it qualified as a brainstorm, but it was at least a direction. Mallory studied the clue line by line, searching for metaphors and hidden meanings, double entendres, loose connections. Then she stepped back again to look at it as a whole. There were mentions of the goddess, and the keys themselves were reputed to unlock imprisoned souls. Put all that together, she decided, and you had a sort of religious reference. With that in mind, she spent the rest of the day going through every church and temple in the valley. She came home empty-handed, but she felt she'd done something positive with her day. She dressed for dinner, keeping it simple with a sleeveless black top and black cropped pants, topped with a tailored jacket the color of strawberries. At exactly 7, she was sliding into heeled sandals and preparing to wait. In her experience, she was the only one who habitually made it a point to be on time. So it was a surprise, a pleasant one, to hear the knock on her door even as she was checking the contents of her purse.
"You're prompt," she said to Flynn when she opened the door.
"Actually, I was here 10 minutes ago, but I didn't want to seem anxious." He handed her a small bouquet of baby roses, nearly the same color as her jacket.
"You look amazing."
"Thanks." She eyed him as she sniffed the rosebuds. He was cute, she thought. Dog or no dog, I'll put these in water. Very nice touch, by the way.
I thought so. Mo wanted to go for candy, but I held out for flowers.
She stopped. "He's not out there, is he?"
No, he's home, making do with kibble and the Bugs Bunny marathon on the Cartoon Network. Mo's nuts about bugs.
I bet. She arranged the flowers in a clear glass vase. "Do you want a drink before we go?"
"Depends. Can you walk 3 blocks in those shoes, or would you rather drive it?"
"I can walk 3 miles in heels. I'm a professional female."
"Can't argue with that.
And because I can't, I'd like to do what I've been thinking about doing since I landed on top of you."
He moved in.
That's what Mallory would think later, when her brain started to function normally again. He simply moved into her,
ran his hands up the sides of her body, over her shoulders, along her throat, then cupped her face in them. It was all very slow, all very smooth. Then his mouth was on hers, taking its own sweet time. Somehow she was backed against the counter, pressed snugly between it and his body. Somehow her hands were gripping his hips, her fingers digging in. And somehow she was sliding into the kiss without a single murmur of protest. His fingers threaded back into her hair, and he nipped, not so playfully, at her bottom lip. When her breath caught, the tone of the kiss changed from flirty warmth to flashing heat. Whoa, wait! She managed to catch the fading echo of warning bells ringing in her head, but her body stayed plastered against his. Okay. In a minute. He needed another minute of her, of the taste of her and the feel of her. There was more here than he'd expected, and he'd expected quite a punch. There was something erotically sharp about the flavor of her, as if her mouth was a rare delicacy that he'd only just been allowed to sample. And something so soft about her texture, all those clouds of gilded hair, all those lovely curves and dips. He gave her lips one last rub with his, then eased back. She stared at him, those blue eyes he decided were irresistible, now wide and wary. Maybe, she hoped the long, slow breath would level her voice again. Maybe we should just start walking now. Sure. He offered a hand and found himself flattered when she not only evaded it, but skirted around him to get her purse. I figured if I kiss you now, I wouldn't be thinking about it all during dinner and lose track of the conversation. He went to the door, opened it for her. The trouble is, now that I have kissed you, I'm probably going to be thinking about kissing you again all during dinner and lose track of the conversation. So if you notice that my mind wanders, you'll know where and why. You think I don't know why you just said that? She walked out into the shimmering evening light with him. By saying that, you'll plant the seed in my head so I'll be thinking about you kissing me all through dinner. Or that's the plan. Damn, you're good. If you're quick enough to unravel the dastardly plots of men regarding sex, the puzzle of the key ought to be child's play to you. You'd think so, wouldn't you? But the simple fact is, I've had more experience with the dastardly plots of men regarding sex than I have with puzzles regarding goddesses and mythological spells. I don't know why. He caught her hand in his, grinned at the sidelong look she sent him. But I find that very exciting. If I ply you with wine at dinner, will you tell me about those experiences? There may be some plots I've missed along the way. You're going to buy me a martini, then we'll see. He'd chosen one of the town's prettiest restaurants and had arranged for a table on the back terrace with a view of the mountains. By the time she was sipping her martini, she was relaxed once more. I'd like to discuss the key. If I find your attention wandering, I'll kick you under the table. So noted. I'd just like to say one thing first. Go ahead. He leaned toward her. Breathed deep. You smell terrific. She leaned toward him. I know. Now, would you like to know what I did today? She waited a beat, then kicked him lightly on the ankle. What? Yes, sorry. She lifted her glass for another sip to hide her amusement. First, I went to see Zoe. She relayed the gist of their conversation, pausing when the first course was served. The little yellow house, Flynn nodded as he brought the look of it into his mind, used to be dog shit brown. She's really fixed it up. I've seen the kid in the yard now that I think about it. Simon. He looks just like her. It's almost spooky. Now that you mention it, I would have put that together when I met her if I'd been able to take my eyes off you for 2 minutes. Her lips twitched, and damn it, she was flattered. You're very good at that, both timing and delivery. Yeah, it's a gift. Then I went to see Dana at her apartment. She was buried in books and brooding. Two of her best things. She hasn't been able to track down a version of the Daughters of Glass story yet, but she's working on it. Then I got this idea. Goddesses, equal worship. All the reading I've been doing indicates that a lot of churches were built on pagan worship sites. Most Christian holy days coincide with the early pagan holy days, which were based on seasons, agriculture, that sort of thing. So I went to church. In fact, I went to every church and temple in a 20-mile radius. That's an interesting connection. Good, clear thinking. That's one of my major skills. I kept going over and over the clue. Look within, look without, singing goddess, and so on. So I went looking. Didn't expect to walk in and see the key waiting for me on a pew, but I thought maybe I'd see the symbol of it, you know, something worked into a stained glass window or a molding. But I didn't. It was still a good idea. A better one might be to go back to that house and talk to Rowena and Pitt again. Maybe. Want to know what I found out? I do. He waited while their entrees were served, then studied her fish and his steak. How do you feel about surf and turf? Amenable. They cut off portions, passed them. You know, this could develop into a serious deal. You and me. A lot of people are fussy about sharing food. I never get that. He sampled the steak. I mean, it's food. You're supposed to eat it. What's the difference if it was on somebody else's plate first? That's an interesting element to factor into a potential relationship. Now, what did you find out? I talked to my grandmother about the story. There were some details I didn't remember clearly. First, there was dissension in the ranks over the god king making immortal his queen. It was okay to fool around with mortals, but he brought her behind the curtain of power, or the curtain of dreams, it's called both, and he took her as his wife. Because of this, some of the gods set themselves apart from the young king and his mortal wife, established their own rule. Politics. Can't get away from it. Naturally, this didn't sit too well with the king. There are other stories, full of war and intrigue and heroics, and that brings us to the daughters. Beloved by their parents and by those loyal to the king and his wife. Each had beauty, as you'd expect, and each had power, a talent. One was an artist, one a bard, and one a warrior. Devoted to each other, they grew up in the kingdom, taught by a young goddess of magic, guarded by the king's most trusted warrior god. Either the teacher or the guard was to be with them at all times to keep them safe from the plots surrounding them. In the painting, there were two figures, a man and a woman, in the background. They seemed to be in an embrace. Flynn gestured with his fork, then speared more steak. That fits with what's coming. The king's advisors were campaigning to have the daughters marry three gods of rank from the opposing faction, to unite the kingdom again. But the self-proclaimed king of the opposing faction didn't like the idea of giving up his throne. Power had corrupted him, and his thirst for more, for complete dominance of this, let's say, nether world, and the mortal one consumed him. He wanted to kill the daughters, but he knew that if he did, all but his most devoted followers would turn against him. So he devised a plot, and the two who were closest to the daughters aided him by falling in love. They betrayed the daughters? Not purposely. He tipped more wine into their glasses. By distraction, by looking at each other rather than looking after their charges. And as the daughters were young women, fond of their keepers, they made it easy for the lovers to slip away from time to time, and one day when they were unprotected, the spell was cast. Their souls were stolen. It's more than that. Are you going to eat the rest of that steak? She glanced down at her plate. No. Do you want it? For Mo. I go back empty-handed, he'll sulk. He asked the waiter to box up the leftovers, then smiled at Mallory. Dessert? No, just coffee. Tell me the rest. Two coffees, a creme brulee, and two spoons. You'll never hold out against the creme brulee, he said to Mallory, then leaned forward to finish the tale. The Bad King's a clever guy and a sorcerer. He doesn't take heat for slaying innocents. And he turns the good king's choices and policy against him. If a mortal is fit to be queen, if three half-mortals are worthy of rank, then let the mortals prove it. Only mortals can break the spell.
Until that's done, the daughters will sleep, unharmed. If mortal women, one to represent each daughter, can find each of the three keys, then the box of souls will be unlocked, and the daughters' souls restored, and the kingdoms united. And if they fail? The most popular version, according to my granny, has the bad king setting a time limit. 3,000 years, 1 millennium for each daughter. If the keys aren't found and the box unlocked within that time, he alone rules both the god world and the mortal.
I never understand why anyone wants to rule the world. Seems like one big headache to me.
She pursed her lips when the dish of creme brulee was set between them. Flynn was right, she decided. She wasn't going to be able to hold out against it.
What happened to the lovers?
A couple of versions of that, too. He dipped his spoon in at one end of the dish while Mallory dipped into the other. My grandmother's pick is the one that has the grieving king sentencing the lovers to death, but his wife intervening, asking for mercy. Instead of execution, banishment. They were cast out through the curtain of dreams, forbidden to return until they found the three mortal women who would unlock the box of souls. And so they wander the earth, gods living as mortals, in search of the triad, who will release not only the souls of the daughters, but their own as well.
Rowena and Pitt think they're the teacher and the warrior?
It pleased him that their conclusions meshed. That would be my take. You've got a couple of weirdos on your hands, Mallory. It's a nice fairy tale, romantic, colorful, but when people start casting themselves and others in the roles, you're edging into Psychoville.
You're forgetting the money.
No, I'm not. The money worries me. $75,000 means it's not a game to them, not a little role-playing entertainment. They're serious. Either they actually believe the myth, or they're seeding the ground for a con.
She toyed with another spoonful of the creme brulee. With the $25,000, I now have approximately $25,205, which includes the $20 I found in a jacket pocket this morning. My parents are fairly average middle-class people. They're not rich or influential. I don't have any rich or influential friends or lovers. I've got nothing worth conning.
Maybe they're looking for something else, something you haven't thought of. But back to those lovers for a minute.
Do you have any poor ones?
She sipped her coffee, measuring him over the rim. The sun had set while they'd had dinner. Now it was candlelight that flickered between them.
Not at the moment.
Here's a coincidence.
Neither do I. I'm in the market for a key, Flynn, not a lover.
You're assuming the key exists.
Yes, I am. If I didn't assume that, I wouldn't bother to look for it, and I gave my word I would.
I'll help you find it.
She set her cup down again. Why?
A lot of reasons. One, I'm just a naturally curious guy, and however this thing works out, it's an interesting story.
He skimmed a fingertip over the back of her hand, and a little thrill danced straight up her arm.
Two, my sister's involved.
Three, I'll get to be around you.
The way I figure it, you won't be able to hold out against me any more than you could hold out against the creme brulee.
Is that confidence or conceit?
Just fate, sweetie. Look, why don't we go back to my place and... Well, hell, I wasn't thinking about kissing you again until you gave me that snotty look. Now I've lost my train of thought.
I'm not having any trouble following that train.
Okay, that wasn't my track, but I'm willing to jump on board. What I was going to say was we could go back and do some research. I can show you what I've got so far, which is basically nothing. I can't dig up any data on your benefactors, at least not under the names they used to buy the peak, or any variations of those names.
I'll leave the research to you and Dana for now.
She shrugged. I've got some other trails to follow.
Such as? Logic. Goddesses. There are a couple of New Age shops in the area. I'm going to check them out. Then there's the painting. I'm going to find out who painted that portrait. See what else he or she has done and where those paintings might be. Who owns them? How they acquired them? I need to take another trip up to Warrior's Peak, have another talk with Pitt and Rowena, and get another look at that painting. A better look.
I'll go with you. There's a story here, Mallory. This could be a huge scam, which would make it big news and my duty to report it. She stiffened up.
You don't have any proof that Rowena and Pitt aren't legitimate. Possibly loony, yes, but not crooks.
Easy. He held up a hand for peace. I'm not writing anything until I have all the facts. I can't get all the facts until I meet all the players. I need an entree to that house. You're it. In exchange, you get the benefit of my keen investigative skills and dogged reporter's determination. I go with you, or I talk Dana into taking me up there.
She tapped a finger on the table while she considered her options. They might not talk to you. In fact, they may not like it that we've brought you into this, even on a peripheral level.
Leave that part to me. Getting into places where I'm not wanted is part of my job description.
Is that how you got into my apartment last night?
Ouch! Why don't we run up there tomorrow morning? I can pick you up at 10.
All right.
What harm could it do to have him along? There's no need to walk me all the way to the door, Mallory said as they approached her apartment building.
Sure there is. I'm just an old-fashioned guy.
No, you're not. She muttered it as she opened her purse for her key. I'm not asking you in.
Okay.
She slanted him a look as they stepped up to the door.
You say that like you're an affable, easygoing man. You're not that either.
It's a ploy.
He grinned.
It is?
Yes. You're stubborn and pushy and more than a little arrogant. You get away with it because you put on that big, charming smile and that I-wouldn't-hurt-a-fly demeanor. But they're just tools to help you get what you want.
God, you see right through me.
Watching her, he twirled the lock of her hair around his finger.
Now I either have to kill you or marry you.
And being appealing on some screwy level doesn't make you less annoying. Therein lies the flaw.
At those words, he caught her face in his hands and crushed his lips enthusiastically to hers.
The heat shot straight up from her belly and seemed to burst out the top of her head.
Neither does that, she managed.
She shoved her key in the lock, pushed the door open, then shut it in his face.
Half a beat later, she yanked it open.
Thanks for dinner.
He rocked gently on his heels when the door shut in his face a second time. When he strolled away, he was whistling and thinking Mallory Price was the kind of woman who made a man's life really interesting. Chapter 6 Dana gulped down her first cup of coffee while standing naked in her tiny kitchen, eyes closed, brain dead. She drained it, hot, black, and strong, before letting out a soft whimper of relief. She downed half the second cup on the way to the shower. She didn't mind mornings, mainly because she was never awake enough to object to them. Her routine rarely varied. Her alarm buzzed, she slapped it off, then rolled out of bed and stumbled into the kitchen where the automatic coffee maker already had the first pot ready. 1.5 cups later, her vision was clear enough for a shower. By the time she was done, her circuits were up and running, and she was too awake to sulk about being awake. She drank the second half of the second cup and listened to the morning news report while she dressed for the day. With a toasted bagel and her third cup of coffee, she settled down with her current breakfast book. She turned only the second page when the knock on her door interrupted her most sacred of rituals.
Damn it!
She marked her place. Her annoyance faded a little when she opened the door to Mallory.
Aren't you the bright and early girl?
Sorry. You said you were working this morning, so I thought you'd be up and around by now.
Up, anyway.
She leaned on the jamb a moment and studied the minute green checks of the soft cotton shirt that precisely matched the color of Mallory's pleated trousers, just as the dove gray slides she wore exactly matched the tone and texture of her shoulder bag.
Do you always dress like that?
Dana wondered.
Like what?
Perfect. With a little laugh, Mallory looked down at herself.
I'm afraid so. It's a compulsion.
Looks good on you, too. I'll probably end up hating you for it. Come on in anyway.
The room was a compact, informal library. Books stood or were stacked on the shelves that ran along two walls from floor to ceiling, sat on the tables like knick-knacks, trooped around the room like soldiers. They struck Mallory as more than knowledge or entertainment, even more than stories and information. They were color and texture in a haphazard yet somehow intricate decorating scheme. The short leg of the L-shaped room boasted still more books, as well as a small table that held the remains of Dana's breakfast. With her hands on her hips, Dana watched Mallory's perusal of her space. She'd seen the reaction before.
No, I haven't read them all, but I will. And no, I don't know how many I have. Want coffee?
Let me just ask this. Do you ever actually use the services of the library?
Sure, but I need to own them. If I don't have 20 or 30 books right here waiting to be read, I start jonesing. That's my compulsion.
Okay.
I'll pass on the coffee, thanks. I already had a cup. Two, and I'm wired.
Two, and I can just manage to form complete sentences.
Bagel?
No, but go ahead. I wanted to catch you before you left for work. Fill you in.
Fill away.
Dana gestured to the second chair at the table, then sat to finish her breakfast. I'm going back up to Warrior's Peak this morning. With Flynn.
Dana's lip curled. I figured he'd horn in.
And hit on you.
Are either of those things a problem for you?
No. He's smarter than he comes across. That's one of the ways he gets people to spill their guts to him. If he hadn't horned in, I'd have baited him until he helped out. As for hitting on you, I had to figure he'd go for either you or Zoe. Flynn really likes women, and they really like him.
Mallory thought of the way he'd moved in her kitchen, the way she'd gone pliant as putty when he had. There's a definite chemical reaction there, but I haven't decided if I like him or not.
Dana crunched on a bagel.
Might as well give in to it. He'll just wear you down, which is another thing he's really good at. He's like a damn border collie.
Excuse me?
You know how they herd sheep?
She used a free hand, zagging it right and left to demonstrate.
How they keep heading them off, working them around until the sheep end up going where the collie wants them to go? That's Flynn.
You'll think, nope, I want to go over here.
And he's thinking, well, you'd be better off there. So you'll end up over there before you realize you've been herded.
She licked cream cheese off her finger. And the hell of it is, when you find yourself there, you almost always realize you are better off. He stays alive by never saying, I told you so.
She'd gone to dinner with him, hadn't she?
Mallory considered.
Kissed him. Twice. Three times if she was going to be technical. And he was not only coming with her to Warrior's Peak, he was driving her. I don't like being maneuvered.
Dana's expression was a combination of pity and amusement.
Well, we'll see how it goes.
She rose, gathering her dishes.
What are you hoping for with Rowena and Pitt?
I don't expect to get much from them. It's the painting.
Mallory followed Dana into the little kitchen. It didn't surprise her to find books here as well, stacked in an open-fronted pantry where the average cook would have stored food staples.
The painting's important somehow, she continued while Dana rinsed off the dishes. What it says, and who said it.
She took a moment to explain the rest of the tale as Flynn had relayed it to her over dinner.
So they're taking on the roles of the teacher and the guard.
That's the theory, Mallory confirmed.
I'm interested in how they'll react when I broach it. And I can use Flynn to distract them long enough to give me time to get another look at the painting and take a couple of pictures of it. That could lead to other paintings with similar themes. It might be helpful.
I'll do a search on mythological art this morning.
Dana checked her watch.
I've got to go. The three of us should get together on this as soon as we can.
Let's see what we come up with today.
They walked out together, and Mallory stopped on the sidewalk.
Dana, is it just crazy to do all this?
Damn right. Call me when you get back from the peak. It was a more pleasant, if less atmospheric, drive on a sunny morning. As a passenger, Mallory could indulge herself with the scenery and wonder what it was like to live high on a ridge where the sky seemed only a hand's span away and the world was spread out like a painting below. A fitting view for gods, she supposed, lofty and dramatic. She had no doubt Rowena and Pitt had chosen it for its power as much as for the privacy. In another few weeks, when those elegantly rolling hills felt the chill of fall, the colors would stun the eye and catch the breath. Mists would hover in the morning, sliding into those folds and dips between the hills, spreading like sparkling pools until the sun dissolved them. And still the house would stand, black as midnight, with its fanciful lines etched against the sky, guarding the valley, or watching it. What did it see, she wondered, year after year across the decades? What did it know? The question brought on a shudder, a sudden sharp sense of dread. Cold? She shook her head and rolled down her window. All at once the car seemed hot and stuffy. No, I'm spooking myself, that's all. If you don't want to do this now, I want to do it. I'm not afraid of a couple of rich eccentrics. In fact, I liked them. And I want to see the painting again. I can't stop thinking about it. Whatever direction my mind goes off in, I keep coming back to the painting. She glanced out her window into the deep, leafy woods. Would you want to live up here? Nope. Intrigued, she looked back at him. That was fast. I'm a social animal. I like having people around. Mo might like it. He gazed into the rearview mirror to see Mo, nose jammed into the narrow window opening, floppy ears flying. I can't believe you brought the dog. He likes to ride in the car. She angled around, studied Mo's blissful expression. Obviously. Have you ever considered getting him clipped so his hair isn't in his eyes? Don't say clipped. Flynn winced as he muttered the word. We're still not over the whole neutering deal. He slowed as they drove along the wall that edged the estate, then stopped to study the twin warriors who flanked the iron gate. They don't look friendly. I camped up here several times with some friends when I was in high school. The house was empty then, so he climbed over the wall. Did you go into the house? There wasn't enough courage in a six-pack of beer for that, but we had a hell of a time freaking ourselves out. Jordan claimed he saw a woman walking on the parapet, or whatever you call it. Swore he did. He wrote a book about her later, so I guess he saw something. Jordan Hawk, Flynn added. You might have heard of him. Jordan Hawk wrote about Warrior's Peak? He called it Phantom Watch. I read that book. As a ripple of fascination raced up her spine, she stared through the bars of the gates. Of course. He described it all perfectly, but then he's a wonderful writer. She looked back at Flynn, suspiciously. You're friends with Jordan Hawk? Since we were kids. He grew up in the valley. I guess we were 16, me, Jordan, and Brad, sucking down beers in the woods, slapping mosquitoes the size of sparrows, and telling very inventive lies about our sexual prowess. It's illegal to drink at 16. Mallory said primly. He shifted, and even through the shaded lenses of his sunglasses, she could see his eyes laughing. Really? What were we thinking? Anyway, 10 years later, Jordan's got his first bestseller, and Brad's off running the family empire. That would be lumber and the homemaker's chain for Bradley Charles Vane IV. And I'm planning on heading to New York to be a hotshot reporter for the Times. Her eyebrows winged up. You worked for the New York Times? No, I never went. One thing and another, he said with a shrug. Let's see what I can do about getting us through this gate. Even as he started to step out of the car, the gate opened with a kind of otherworldly silence that sent a chill dancing along the nape of his neck. Must really keep it lubed, he murmured. And I guess somebody knows we're out here. He slid back behind the wheel and drove through. The house looked just as strange and stark and stunning in daylight as it had in a night storm. There was no magnificent stag to greet her,
but the flag with its key emblem flew high and white, and rivers of flowers ran below. Gargoyles clung to the stone and looked, to Mallory's mind, as if they were considering leaping, not so playfully, on any visitor. I never got this close in the daylight. Slowly, Flynn stepped out of the car. It's spooky. Yeah, but in a good way. It's terrific, like something you expect to see on a cliff above a raging sea. Too bad there's no moat. That would really top it off. Wait until you see the inside. Mallory moved up beside him and didn't object in the least when Flynn took her hand. The tickle at the back of her throat made her feel foolish and female. I don't know why I'm so nervous. She caught herself whispering it. Then her hand jerked in Flynn's when the big entrance door opened. Rowena stood framed in the towering doorway. She wore simple gray pants with a roomy shirt the color of the forest. Her hair spilled over her shoulders. Her lips were unpainted, her feet bare. But however casual the outfit, she managed to look exotic, like some foreign queen on a quiet holiday. Mallory caught the glint of diamonds at her ears.
How lovely!
Rowena held out a hand on which rings sparkled elegantly.
How nice to see you again, Mallory. And you've brought me such a handsome surprise.
Flynn Hennessy. He's Dana's brother.
Welcome. Pitt will be right along. He's just finishing up a call.
She gestured them inside. Flynn had to resist gawking at the foyer. It doesn't seem like the kind of place you'd find telephones. Rowena's chuckle was low, almost a purr. We enjoy the advantages of technology.
Come, we'll have tea.
We don't want to put you to any trouble, Mallory began, but Rowena waved her off. Guests are never any trouble. How did you find out about Warrior's Peak, Miss...
Rowena.
She slid an arm silkily through Flynn's as she walked them to the parlor.
You must call me Rowena.
Pitt always has an ear to the ground for an interesting spot. You travel a lot?
We do, yes.
For work or pleasure?
Without pleasure, there's little point in work.
She trailed a fingertip playfully down his arm.
Won't you sit? Ah, here's the tea.
Mallory recognized the servant from her first visit. She brought the tea cart in silently and left the same way. What business are you in? Flynn asked.
Oh, we do a bit of this and that, and some of the other.
Milk? She asked Mallory as she poured. Honey? Lemon?
A little lemon, thank you. I have a lot of questions. I'm sure you do, as does your very attractive companion. How do you like your tea, Flynn?
Black's fine.
So American.
And what is your business, Flynn? He took the delicate cup she offered. His gaze was direct and suddenly very cool. I'm sure you already know. You didn't pick my sister's name out of a hat. You know everything you need to know about her, and that would include me.
Yes.
Rowena added both milk and honey to her own tea. Rather than looking insulted or chagrined, she looked pleased.
The newspaper business must be very interesting. So much information to be gathered and dispersed. I imagine it takes a clever mind to know how to do both well. And here is Pitt.
He entered a room, Flynn thought, like a general, measuring the field, gauging his ground, outlining his approach. However genial his smile, Flynn was certain there was a steely soldier behind it. Miss Price, what a pleasure to see you again. He took her hand, brought it to within an inch of his lips in a gesture that seemed too fluid not to be natural.
Thanks for seeing us.
This is Flynn...
Yes, Mr. Hennessy, he inclined his head.
How do you do?
Well enough.
Our friends have questions and concerns, Rowena told him as she passed the cup of tea she'd already prepared.
Naturally.
Pitt took a seat. You're wondering, I imagine, if we're...
He turned that mildly curious look to Rowena. Lunatics, she supplied, then lifted a plate. Scones?
Ah, yes, lunatics.
Pitt helped himself to a scone and a generous dollop of clotted cream. I can assure you, we're not. But then again, so would I if we were. So that's very little help to you.
Tell me, Miss Price, are you having second thoughts about our arrangement?
I took your money and gave you my word. His expression softened very slightly.
Yes. To some that would make little difference.
It makes all the difference to me.
That could change, Flynn put in, depending on where the money comes from.
Are you implying we could be criminals?
Now temper showed in the flush that swept Rowena's ice-edged cheekbones. It shows considerable lack of courtesy to come into our home and accuse us of being thieves.
Reporters aren't known for their courtesy, and neither are brothers when they're looking out for their sisters.
Pip murmured something quiet and foreign, skimmed his long fingers over the back of Rowena's hand, the way a man might soothe a cat who was about to spit and claw.
Understood. It happens I've some skill in monetary matters. The money comes to us through perfectly legal means. We're neither lunatics nor criminals.
Who are you? Mallory demanded before Flynn could speak again. Where do you come from?
What do you think? Pitt challenged softly.
I don't know. But I think you believe you represent the teacher and the warrior who failed to protect the Daughters of Glass. An eyebrow arched slightly.
You've learned more since you were here last.
Will you learn more yet?
I intend to. You could help me. We're not free to help you in that way. But I will tell you this. Not only teacher and warrior, but companions and friends to those precious ones, and so only more responsible.
It's only a legend.
The intensity in his eyes dimmed, and he leaned back again. It must be, as such things are beyond the limits of your mind and the boundaries of your world. Still, I can promise you the keys exist.
Where is the box of souls? Flynn asked him.
Safe. Could I see the painting again?
Now Mallory turned to Rowena. I'd like Flynn to see it.
Of course.
She rose and led the way into the room dominated by the portrait of the Daughters of Glass. Mallory heard Flynn catch his breath. Then they were moving together closer to the painting.
It's even more magnificent than I remembered. Can you tell me who painted this?
Someone, Rowena said quietly, who knew love and grief.
Someone who knows Mallory, and my sister, and Zoe McCourt.
Rowena let out a sigh.
You're a cynic, Flynn, and a suspicious one. But as you put yourself in the role of protector, I'll forgive you for it. We don't wish Mallory, Dana, or Zoe any harm. Quite the opposite.
Something in her tone made him want to believe her.
It's pretty disconcerting to see my sister's face up there.
You'd do whatever needed to be done to keep her safe and well. I understand that kind of loyalty and love. I admire and respect it. She's in no danger from me or Pitt. I can swear that to you.
He turned now, zeroing in on what hadn't been said.
But from someone else?
Life's a gamble, was all Rowena said. Your tea's getting cold.
She turned toward the door just as Pitt stepped to it.
There seems to be a very large, very unhappy dog of some sort outside.
The temper and sharp words hadn't ruffled Flynn a bit, but that single statement made him wince.
He's mine.
You have a dog?
The change in Rowena's tone was almost girlish. Everything about her seemed to go light and bright, bubbling out as she gripped Flynn's hand.
He calls it a dog, Mallory said under her breath. Flynn merely gave her a sorrowful look before speaking to Rowena. You like dogs?
Yes, very much. Could I meet him?
Sure.
While you're introducing Rowena and Pitt to Mo at their peril, could I take a minute to freshen up?
Casually, Mallory gestured toward the powder room.
I remember where it is.
Of course. For the first time since Mallory had met her, Rowena seemed distracted. She already had a hand on Flynn's arm as they started down the hall.
What kind of dog is he?
That's debatable.
Mallory slipped into the powder room and counted to five. Slowly. Heart pounding, she opened the door a crack and did her best to peer up and down the corridor. Moving quickly now, she dashed back to the portrait, dragging out the little digital camera in her purse as she ran. She took half a dozen full-length shots, then some of smaller details. With a guilty look over her shoulder, she shoved the camera back into the purse and pulled out her glasses, a plastic bag, and a small palette knife. With her ears buzzing, she stepped up on the hearth and carefully, gently, scraped flakes of paint into the bag. The entire process took less than 3 minutes, but her palms were slick with sweat, her legs loose and wobbly by the time she'd finished. She took another moment to compose herself, then strolled with what she hoped was casual ease out of the room and out of the house. The instant she stepped outside, she stopped dead. There was the regal and magnificent Rowena, sitting on the ground with a mountain of dogs sprawled over her lap. And she was giggling.
"Oh, he's wonderful! Such a big sweetheart! What a good boy you are!"
She bent her head and nuzzled Moe's fur. His tail beat like a jackhammer. "What a kind, pretty boy!" She looked up at Flynn and beamed.
"Did he find you, or did you find him?"
"It was sort of mutual." One dog lover recognized another. Tucking his thumbs in his pockets, Flynn scanned the expansive lawns, the slices of woods. "Big place like this, lots of room to run. You could have a pack of dogs."
"Yes. Well."
Rowena lowered her head again and rubbed Moe's belly. "We travel considerably." Pitt laid a hand on Rowena's hair, stroked it. "How long do you plan to stay here?"
"When the 3 months is up, we'll move on."
"To?"
"That will depend."
"Agra."
"Yes, yes."
Rowena cuddled Moe another moment, then with a wistful sigh got to her feet.
"You're very lucky to have such goodness in your life. I hope you treasure him."
"I do."
"I see you do, yes.
You may be cynical and suspicious, but a dog like this knows a good heart."
"Yeah," Flynn agreed. "I believe that." "I hope you will bring him if you come back. He can run." "Goodbye, Moe."
Moe sat up and lifted one massive paw with unaccustomed dignity.
"Wow! That's a new one."
Flynn blinked as Moe politely allowed Rowena to shake his paw.
"Hey, Mal, did you see?"
As he said her name, Moe's head swiveled, and he was off at a sprint in Mallory's direction, bringing a distressed yip to her throat as she braced for the onslaught. Rowena called out a single indecipherable word in a calm, brisk tone. Moe skidded to a halt inches from Mallory's feet, plopped onto his butt, and once more lifted his paw.
"Well," Mallory expelled a relieved breath, "that's more like it."
She reached down, obligingly shook the offered paw.
"Good for you, Moe."
"How the hell do you do that?" Flynn wanted to know.
"I have a way with animals."
"I'll say. What was that, Gaelic?"
"Hmm."
Funny that Moe would understand a command in Gaelic when he mostly ignores them in plain English.
"Dogs understand more than words."
She held out a hand for Flynn's.
"I hope you'll all come back. We enjoy company."
"Thanks for your time." Mallory walked to the car with Moe trotting happily beside her. The minute she sat, she tucked her purse on the floor like a guilty secret. Rowena laughed, but the sound was a bit watery as Moe stuck his head out of the backseat window. She lifted a hand in a wave, then leaned against Pitt as Flynn drove away.
"I have real hope," she murmured. "I can't remember the last time I felt real hope. It frightens me. It actually frightens me to feel it."
Pitt wrapped an arm around her, drew her tighter to his side. "Don't weep, my heart."
"Foolish." She dashed a tear away. "To cry over a stranger's dog. When we get home..."
He shifted her, cupped her face in his hands. His tone was gentle, yet somehow urgent. "When we get home, you'll have 100 dogs, 1,000.
"One will do."
She rose on her toes to brush her lips across his. In the car, Mallory let out a long, long breath.
I take that sound of relief to mean you got the pictures.
I did. I felt like an international art thief. I guess I have to give Mo points for being the main distraction.
So, tell me what you thought of them.
They're slick, smart, and full of secrets. But they don't seem crazy. They're used to money, real money. Used to drinking tea out of antique cups brought in by a servant. They're educated, cultured, and a little snobby with it. The place is full of stuff, fancy stuff. They've only been here a few weeks, so they didn't furnish those rooms locally. They had it shipped in. I should be able to track that. Frowning, he tapped his fingers on the steering wheel.
She went goony over Mo.
What?
She turned into a puddle the minute she saw him. I mean, he's got a lot of charm, but she melted.
I have this impression of her from inside. Cool, confident, aloof. The kind of woman who's sexy because she knows she's in charge, strolling up Madison Avenue with a Prada bag on her arm or running a board meeting in L.A. Power, money, brains, and looks all wrapped up in sex.
I get it. You thought she was sexy.
Last checkup, I had a pulse, so yeah. But you should have seen her face when Mo jumped out of the car. All that polish, that sheen, just vanished. She lit up like Christmas morning.
So she likes dogs.
No, it was more. It wasn't the coochie-coo that some fancy women do with dogs. It was fall down on the ground, roll in the grass, and gut laugh.
So why doesn't she have one?
Maybe Pitt won't have one around.
Flynn shook his head. You're more observant than that. That guy would slice open a vein for her if she asked him to.
Something strange about the way she got Mo to shake hands.
Something strange about the whole deal.
No argument. I'm going to concentrate on the painting, at least until one of us comes up with a different angle. I'll leave you to try to pin down Rowena and Pitt. I've got to cover a town hall meeting tonight. How about we get together tomorrow?
He maneuvers. He herds.
She remembered Dana's words and shot him a quick, suspicious look.
Define get together.
I'll adjust the definition any way you want.
I've got 4 weeks, less now, to find this key. I'm currently unemployed and have to figure out what I'm going to do, at least professionally, for the rest of my life. I recently ended a relationship that was going nowhere. Add up all the above, and it's very clear I don't have time for dating and exploring a new personal relationship.
Hold on a minute.
He pulled off to the side of the windy road, unhooked a seatbelt. He leaned over, took her shoulders, and eased her over as far as her own belt would allow while his mouth ravished hers. A rocket of heat shot up her spine and left its edgy afterburn in her belly.
You've, really got a knack for that, she managed when she could resume breathing.
I practice as often as possible.
To prove it, he kissed her again.
Slower this time. Deeper. Until he felt her quiver.
I just wanted you to add that to your equation.
I was an art major. Math isn't my strong suit. Come back here a minute.
She grabbed his shirt, yanked him to her, and let herself go.
Everything inside her sparked. Blood and bone and brain.
If this was what it meant to be herded, she thought dimly, she could be flexible about her direction.
When his hands clenched in her hair, she felt a stir of power and anxiety that was as potent as a drug.
We really can't do this. But she was tugging his shirt out of his waistband, desperate to get her hands on flesh.
I know. Can't. He fumbled with the buckle of her seatbelt.
We'll stop in a minute.
Okay, but first...
She brought his hand to her breast, then moaned as her heart seemed to tip into his palm. He shifted her, cursed when he wrapped his elbow on the steering wheel, and Mo, delighted with the prospect of a wrestling match, squeezed his head between the seats and slathered both of them with sloppy kisses.
Oh, God!
Torn between laughter and shock, Mallory scrubbed at her mouth.
I really, really hope that was your tongue.
Ditto. Struggling to get his breath back, Flynn stared down at her. Her hair was sexily tousled, her face flushed, her mouth just a little swollen from the assault of his. With the flat of his hand, he shoved Moe's face away and snapped out a curt order to sit. The dog flopped back on his seat and whined as if he'd been beaten with a club.
I wasn't planning on moving this fast.
Mallory shook her head. I wasn't planning on moving at all, and I've always got a plan.
Been a while since I tried this in a car parked on the side of the road.
Me too. She slid her gaze toward the pathetic sounds coming from the back seat. Under the circumstances.
Yeah, better not.
I want to make love with you. He drew her up. To touch you, to feel you move under my hands. I want that, Mallory.
I need to think. Everything about this is complicated, so I have to think about it.
She certainly had to think about the fact that she'd nearly torn the man's clothes off in the front seat of a car on the side of a public road in broad daylight. My life's a mess, Flynn.
The thought depressed her enough to have her pulse calming again. Whatever the equation, I've screwed things up, and I have to get back on track. I don't do well with messy situations, so let's slow this down a little.
He hooked a finger in the V of her blouse.
How much is a little?
I don't know yet.
Oh, I can't stand it. She scooted around, leaned over the seat. Don't cry, you big baby.
She ruffled the fur between Moe's ears. Nobody's mad at you.
Speak for yourself, Flynn grumbled.
Chapter 7. I feel the sun, warm and somehow fluid like a quiet waterfall gliding from a golden river. It pours over me in a kind of baptism. I smell roses and lilies and some spicier flower that cuts the sweetness. I hear water, a playful trickle and plop as it rises up, then falls back into itself. All these things slide over me, or I slide into them. But I see nothing but a dense white, like a curtain I can't part. Why am I not afraid? Laughter floats toward me, bright and easy and female. There's a youthful cheer in it that makes me smile, that brings a tickle of laughter to my own throat. I want to find the source of that laughter and join in. Voices now, that quick bird chatter that is again youth and female. The sounds come and go, ebb and flow. Am I drifting toward it or away? Slowly, slowly, the curtain thins. Only a mist now, soft as silken rain with sunlight sparkling through it. And through it, I see color. Such bold, rich color, it sears through that thinning mist and stuns my eyes. Tiles are gleaming silver and explode with sunlight in blinding flashes where the thick green leaves and hot pink blossoms of trees don't shade shelter. Flowers swim in pools or dance in swirling beds. There are three women, girls really, gathered around the fountain that plays its happy tune. It's their laughter I hear. One has a small harp in her lap and the other a quill. But they're laughing at the wriggling puppy the third holds in her arms. They're so lovely. There is about them a touching innocence that's so perfectly suited to the garden where they spend this bright afternoon. Then I see the sword sheathed at one's hip. Innocent, perhaps, but strong. There is power here. I can feel the tingle of it now sparking on the air, and still I am not afraid. They call the puppy Dearmit and set it down so it can romp around the fountain. Its excited yaps ring like bells. I see one girl slide her arm around the waist of another and the third rest her head on the second shoulder. There, they become a unit, a kind of triad, a whole of three parts that chatter about their new puppy and laugh as he rolls gleefully in the flowers. I hear them say names I know. Somehow, no, and look as they look, in the distance, in the shade of a tree that drips down with graceful branches heavy with jeweled fruit, are a couple caught in a passionate embrace. He's tall and dark,
and there's a strength to him I can sense might be terrible if roused. She is beautiful and very slender, but there is about her, too, a sense of more. They're desperately in love. I can feel that need, that heat inside me throbbing like a wound. Is love so painful? The girls sigh over it, and they wish. Someday, they hope, someday they will love like that. Desire and romance, fear and joy, all tied into one consuming entity. They will know the taste of a lover's lips, the thrill of a lover's touch. Someday. We are, all of us, caught in that urgent embrace, absorbed with our envy and our dreams. The sky darkens. The colors dim. I feel the wind now. Cold. Cold as it spins around and around. The sudden roar of it screams in my ears. Blossoms tear from branches. Petals fly like bright bullets. Now I am afraid. Now I'm terrified, even before I see the sly black shape of the snake slither over those silver tiles, before I see the shadow slink out of the trees and lift high the glass box it holds in its black arms. Words boom out. Though I press my hands to my ears to block them, I hear them inside my head. Mark this time, and mark this hour when I wield my awful power. Mortal souls of daughters, three forever, will belong to me. Their bodies lie in eternal sleep, their souls imprisoned in this glass. The spell will hold sure and deep unless these things come to pass. Three keys to find, to fit, only by mortal hands to turn. 3,000 years in which to learn, an instant more, and souls will burn. This test, this quest, to prove a mortal's worth, with these words I wind them, and with my art I bind them. These locks I seal and forge these keys, and here hurl them to the hand of destiny. The wind dies, and the air goes still. There on those sun-washed tiles, the three girls lie, their eyes closed as if in sleep, their hands clasped, three parts of one whole. Beside them is a glass box, its clear panels leaded at the seams, its trio of locks glinting gold. Warm blue lights dance frantically inside it, seem to beat against the glass walls like trapped wings. Three keys lie scattered around it, and seeing them, I weep. Mallory was still shaky when she opened the door to Zoe.
I got here as soon as I could. I had to get Simon off to school. He sounded so upset on the phone. What?
Dana's not here yet. I'd rather just go through this once. I made coffee.
Great.
Zoe put a hand on Mallory's shoulder and simply lowered her into a chair.
I'll get it.
You look like you still need to catch your breath.
Kitchen that way?
Yeah. Grateful, Mallory leaned back, rubbed her hands over her face.
Why don't you tell me how your date with Flynn went the other night?
What?
Oh, good. Fine.
She dropped her hands, then stared at them as if they belonged to someone else.
He seems almost normal without his dog.
That must be Dana.
I'll get it. Just sit.
Zoe hurried out from the kitchen, heading Mallory off before she could rise.
Okay, where's the fire? Dana demanded, then stopped, sniffed.
Coffee.
Don't make me beg for it.
I'm getting it. Go sit with Mallory,
Zoe added under her breath. Dana plopped down in a chair, pursed her lips, and gave Mallory a long, hard stare.
You look terrible.
Thanks so much.
Hey, don't expect hugs and kisses when you get me out of bed and over here within 20 minutes and on one cup of coffee. Besides, it's reassuring to know you don't roll out of bed looking perfect.
What's up?
Mallory glanced over as Zoe came back with three thick white mugs of coffee on a tray.
I had a dream.
I was having a damn good one myself.
I think it involved Spike from Buffy the Vampire Slayer and a really big vat of dark chocolate. And then you called and interrupted it.
Dana!
Zoe shook her head, then sat on the arm of Mallory's chair.
A nightmare?
No. At least, no. As soon as I woke up, I typed it out. She rose now and picked up papers from the table. I've never had a dream with so much detail before. At least I've never remembered details so clearly after I woke up. I wrote it down because I wanted to make sure I didn't forget anything. But I'm not going to. Anyway, it'll be easier if you both just read it. She handed them the typed pages, then took her own coffee and paced to the patio doors. It was going to be another beautiful day, she mused. Another beautiful late summer day with clear skies and warm breezes. People would walk around town, enjoying the weather, going about their business, their normal, everyday chores in the normal, everyday world. And she would never forget the sound of that dream wind, the feel of that sudden, bitter cold.
Wow. I can see why this shook you up.
Dana set the pages aside. But it's pretty clear where it came from. Flynn told me you guys went up to see the painting again yesterday. All of this is on your mind, and your subconscious just flipped you into it.
It's scary.
Zoe rushed to finish the last few sentences before she got up. Walking over, she rubbed her hands on Mallory's shoulders.
No wonder you were so upset. I'm glad you called us.
It wasn't just a dream.
I was there.
She warmed her chilled hands on the coffee mug as she turned. I walked into that painting.
Okay, honey. Take it down a notch or two.
Dana held up a hand. You're over-identifying, that's all. A strong, vivid dream can really suck you in. I don't expect you to believe me, but I'm going to say out loud what's been in my head since I woke up.
Woke up, she remembered, shaking with cold, with the sound of that terrible wind still ringing in her ears. I was there. I could smell the flowers and feel the heat, then the cold and the wind. I heard them screaming.
She closed her eyes and fought a fresh surge of panic. She could still hear them screaming.
And I felt this charge in the air, this pressure. When I woke, my ears were still ringing from it. They were speaking Gaelic, but I understood them. How could I?
You just thought, no!
She shook her head fiercely at Zoe. I knew! When the storm came, when everything went crazy, I heard them calling out for their father.
Ki ahi of Shing!
Father, help us!
I looked it up this morning, but I knew!
How could I know?
She took a steadying breath. Their names were Venora, Ninian, and Kaina.
How would I know?
She walked back to sit. The relief of saying it all calmed her. Her pulse leveled, as did her voice. They were so afraid. One minute they were just young girls playing with their puppy in a world that seemed so perfect and peaceful. And the next, what made them human was being torn out of them. It hurt them, and there was nothing I could do.
I don't know what to think about this. Dana said after a moment. I'm trying to be logical here. The painting's drawn you from the first, and we know the legend is Celtic in origin. We look like the girls in the painting, so we identify with them. How did I know the Gaelic? How do I know their names?
Dana frowned into her coffee. I can't explain that.
I'll tell you something else I know.
Whatever locked those souls away is dark. And it's powerful, and it's greedy. It won't want us to win.
The box and the keys, Zoe interrupted. You saw them. You know what they look like.
The box is very simple, very beautiful. Leaded glass, a high-domed lid, three locks across the front. The keys are like the logo in the invitations, like the emblem on the flag flying on the house. They're small, only about 3 inches long, I'd say.
It still doesn't make sense, Dana insisted. If they had the keys, why hide them? Why not just hand them to the right people and game over?
I don't know,
Mallory rubbed her temples.
There must be a reason.
You said you knew the names they called the couple, making out under the tree, Dana reminded her.
Rowena and Pitt.
Mallory dropped her hands. Rowena and Pitt, she repeated. They couldn't stop it either. It happened so quickly, so violently. She took a long, long breath. Here's the kicker. I believe it all. I don't care how crazy it sounds. I believe it all. It happened. I was taken into that painting through the curtain of dreams, and I watched it happen. I have to find that key. Whatever it takes, I have to find it. After a morning staff meeting that included jelly donuts and a pissed-off reporter who'd had her article on fall fashion cut by 2 inches, Flynn escaped to his office. As his staff consisted of fewer than 30 people, including the eager 16-year-old he'd paid to write a weekly column from the teenage perspective, having one reporter and a snit was a major staff glitch. He flipped through his messages, punched up a feature on Valley Nightlife, approved a couple of photos for the next day's edition, and checked the accounting on ads. He could hear the occasional ring of a phone, and even with his door shut, the muffled clatter of fingers on keyboards. The police radio on top of his file cabinet beeped and hummed. The television, squeezed between books on a shelf, was set on mute. He had the window open and could hear the light whoosh of morning traffic, the sporadic thump of bass from a car stereo playing too loud. Now and then, he heard a door or drawer slam from the room beyond. Rhoda, the society-slash-fashion-slash-gossip reporter, was still making her annoyance known. Without looking through the glass, he could see her in his mind, spitting darts at him. She, along with more than half the staff, had worked for the paper since he'd been a boy, and plenty of them, he knew, continued to see the Dispatch as his mother's paper, if not his grandfather's. There were times when he resented it, times when he despaired of it, and times when it simply amused him. He couldn't decide which reaction he was having at the moment. All he could think was that Rhoda scared the hell out of him. The best he could do was not think about it, or her, and settle in to polish his article on the meeting he'd attended the night before. A proposed stoplight at Market and Spruce, a debate over the budget, and the need to repair the sidewalks on Main, and a rather spirited argument regarding the highly controversial notion of installing parking meters on Main to help pay for those repairs. Flynn did what he could to inject a little energy into the subject matter and still stay true to the reporter's code of objectivity. The Dispatch wasn't exactly the Daily Planet, he reflected. But then again, he wasn't exactly Perry White. Nobody around here would ever call him Chief. Even without Rhoda's periodic sniffs, he wasn't certain that anyone, including himself, really believed he was in charge. His mother cast a very long shadow. Elizabeth Flynn Hennessy Steele. Even her name cast a very long shadow. He loved her. Of course he did. Most of the time he even liked her. They butted heads plenty when he was growing up, but he'd always respected her. He had to respect a woman who ran her life and her business with equal fervor and expected everyone else to do the same. Just as you had to give her credit for stepping out of that business when necessity demanded it, even if she had dumped it in her reluctant son's lap. She'd dumped it all, including, he thought with a wary glance toward Rhoda's desk, surly reporters.